story of Carpenter Mike. He dropped his tools and his keys and left, and headed out as far as he could, past the city and gated neighborhoods. This left meets the stars, wrote down what he drowned, and he built a machine for no one to see, and to fly.
Seemed that life was so wonderful and comfortable, 'cause we were powerful and in control. Then daddy's judges came through and they appointed me the president, with no precedent, Pennsylvania Avenue resident.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Over 1,000 workers are on strike at 4 downtown San Francisco hotels. Represented by Unite Here, Local 2, the hospitality employees vow to stay out for 2 weeks. John Wilhelm, president of the hospitality division, says workers are striking to protect their health and pension benefits, reduce workloads, and for higher pay.
Most important issues being fought about in these cities is the rapid increase in health care costs. In San Francisco, the employers have proposed that by the end of a proposed 5-year contract, San Francisco hotel workers who pay virtually nothing for their health care now would pay $273 per person per month out of pocket, which is totally unaffordable in the wage brackets that exist in our industry. If we're going to have effective bargaining in each of the hotel markets, we've got to figure out how to have a national dialogue on the issues that are the most important.
Despite fierce management resistance, Unite Here wants a 2-year deal to line up contract negotiations with the bulk of the other major union hotels in the U.S., including New York, Chicago, Toronto, Honolulu, and Boston.
A minimum wage referendum placed on the ballot in Florida could change the outcome of the November 2nd presidential election. The measure asks voters to support an increase in the state minimum wage from $5.15 to $6.15 an hour this year, with annual increases connected to inflation. The initiative could bring out voters who normally would not vote because they are turned off by the candidates. Elise Gowdy-Wright, director of South Florida Jobs with Justice, organized a coalition of civil rights groups, religious congregations, and labor unions to collect nearly 1 million signatures over a 10-month period.
I think for a lot of folks that are behind this effort, the hope is that because this is such a popular issue and there's so many people who are supportive of it, that it will help with voter turnout.
Gowdy-Wright believes increasing the minimum wage will have a positive ripple effect for many Florida workers.
Those folks who make minimum wage will be directly impacted, but those folks who might make slightly higher than minimum wage, many of those employers will feel inclined to raise their wages as well.
The restaurant industry and the Florida Chamber of Commerce are opposing the ballot initiative. George W. Bush opposes raising the national minimum wage from its 1997 level, while John Kerry has expressed support for an increase. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Black men with the same skills as white men are only half as likely to attain management positions. That's according to a new study by Baruch College's School of Public Affairs. Black women, the study says, are only a third as likely to obtain those same management positions. The study finds that the glass ceiling phenomenon, usually associated primarily with women trying to obtain equality in the workplace, has now begun to apply to minorities.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Mr. and Mrs. Green, let's talk about ways to grow your wealth.
Where can we get the highest return with the lowest risk?
These days, elections.
We don't usually get involved in politics.
Well, consider this. Over the past 4 years, the pharmaceutical sector turned $44 million in contributions into Medicare legislation worth $139 billion in profits.
Not
excellent.
Bad.
Who shall we make the check out to?
Want to protect your outrageous wealth? Invest in the right candidate.
Easily paid for by billionaires for Bush.
I bring you tidings of great joy. At last, our Congress critters have done something tangible to lift people up from the economic doldrums. They've raised wages in America. You're not silly enough to think for a moment that Congress would raise your wages, are you? No, no, Nanette. For the past several years, they've kept the minimum wage in our country stuck at the paltry poverty level of $5.15 an hour. It's their wages that they've just raised. Again. By again, I refer to the fact that this is the sixth pay hike that our lawmakers have bestowed upon themselves in the past 6 years. This time, the members will pocket an extra $4,000 each, raising their gross pay to about $162,000 a year. Of course, congressional leaders don't do such dirty work directly. Instead, these steady increases, now totaling some $25,000 over the 6 years, have come surreptitiously. Each year, an automatic congressional increase is tucked deep inside the mammoth appropriation bill for the Treasury Department, a bill that always passes. So members always get a raise, unless they choose to deny themselves by specifically voting to remove the automatic hike. Thus far, they've shown remarkable restraint in this regard. One bold member who keeps trying to say no to this help-yourself dip into the taxpayer's gravy is Jim Matheson, Democrat of Utah. Again this year, Matheson called for a vote on the $4,000 increase. But by a tally of 235 to 170, his colleagues rejected his procedural motion, thus avoiding even having to cast a direct public vote on their money grab. This is Jim Hightower saying, at a time when the wages of average Americans have fallen in terms of buying power, it's good to know whose side your Congress critter is on. To learn how your member of Congress voted on Matheson's attempt at honesty, call Taxpayers for Common Sense, 1-800-TAXPAYER.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
But who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's. Know who's really gelling? The King of Queens. Monday through Friday. Check your local listings.
Your oldest has just turned driving age. Time to add him to your policy. So you get in your car, drive down to your insurance company. Hunt for a space, double park, get a parking ticket, get in a fight with a meter maid, get thrown in jail, meet a guy named Wally. Wait a minute. This is just a bad dream. You've got Geico. You don't have to drive anywhere. You can do all that car insurance stuff online. Oh, that was a close one.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. Online at geico.com.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, it was the monkey who did it. Yeah, it was the chimpanzee. You didn't hear? It's a remark. Yes, indeed, friends, it was the chimpanzee that tampered with the voting machine. Welcome, Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, with archives at whiterosesociety.org. And on the Tom Hartman website, tomhartman.com, where you can also find a direct link to our chat room, already well-populated. Complete with, today we have, isn't it great, Bradenton for Bush. Somebody in there defending George Bush. I love it. So, and welcome. Welcome, Bradenton. Always nice to have concern. In fact, we're going to have on at the bottom of the hour today Jerry Corzai, the Citizens for Honest Fighter Pilots, the group that has been outing George Bush. Their founder, Evelyn Pringle, wrote an op-ed for BuzzFlash saying, Citizens for Honest Fighter Pilots say Jerry Corzai deserves as much airtime as John O'Neill. And so we decided to give him some. We're going to have him on. This is the guy who says that ragheads are boy bumpers and Islam is a peaceful religion just as long as the women are beaten, the boys buggered, and the infidels are killed. And you'll have an opportunity to call in and talk with Jerry Corzai if you'd like. Our number 1-866-889-8894, www.tomhartman.com, the website. And but back to the chimpanzees. They actually did. I told you the story. This was on national television. Topic A with Tina Brown was guest hosted. This must have been about 2 months ago by Howard Dean. And he had on Bev Harris, and they pulled up an actual Diebold voting machine. And looking at the, you know, and it's a Windows operating system, of course, machine. And this was a machine that would have been one of the machines that controls hundreds of other machines in various counties around the state. And so it pulls together all the results. And in 90 seconds, you know, with the clock ticking, 90 seconds, real time, live television, Howard Dean hacked a Diebold voting machine and reversed the outcome of an election. Honest to God. I am not kidding you. So people said, well, that was Howard Dean. He's a smart guy. He's got an MD. He, you know, he went to college. He went to Yale. Bev Harris said, well, a chimp could do it. And David Baer of Diebold said, impossible. So they did it. Simply by double-clicking the file, we opened a real Diebold audit log file using real Diebold software. We then highlighted the records that we wanted Baxter to obliterate. Who is Baxter? Baxter is the chimp! Baxter then hit the delete key, erasing the audit log records, and then hit the enter key, confirming the command. What is the audit log, you may ask? Well, this is the automatically generated report that, like a black box in an airplane, is supposed to keep a record of everything that happens in the election. Supposedly, according to Diebold, it will keep a record of any tampering. But Baxter the chimp nuked it in two keystrokes. How long did it take them to teach Baxter to hit those two keys in that order? 10 minutes. Yes, indeed, they were able to teach the chimp how to hack a Diebold machine in 10 minutes so that the chimp could do it in less than one. Kathy Cox, Secretary of the State of Georgia, commenting on this. Yes, they actually got the Secretary of State for the State of Georgia, the state where the election pre-polls and post-polls showed that Max Cleland won, but somehow Saxby Chambliss won by the exact margin that it showed Max Cleland was going to win by. There's no paper trail, of course. There will be no audit. Kathy Cox, the Secretary of the State of Georgia, her response to this was that if a chimp got into the cockpit of an airplane, he could crash the airplane too. Well, that's true. It also, as Bev Harris points out, shows what's wrong with our public education system. We're not teaching critical thinking skills anymore. She says, her question, Bev Harris's question to Kathy Cox. Are you saying that if a chimp can crash an airplane if he gets into the cockpit, are you saying that if a chimp gets into an election office, he can crash the election? Is that really the point you meant to make? Apparently. A reporter for a major news service, I'm not making this up, folks, this is real, said, this isn't realistic. You'd notice if a chimpanzee was in the elections office. This is true. This is absolutely true. Bev Harris, blackboxvoting.org. You can read the whole story. Chimpanzee hacking Diebold audit log. Yes, they really did it. They really, really did it. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Kerry picks up some support in Ohio. A new poll. His Bush's lead has dropped from an 8-point lead earlier in September down to a 2-point lead. Of course, this is a Gallup poll, and now we have George Gallup Jr., the retiring now head of Gallup, saying, and I quote, this just very recently, this from a story September 30th, the most profound purpose of polls is to see how people are responding to God. When I ask a question on these subjects, what I'm always trying to find out is, are we doing the will of God? This George Gallup Jr. The world, and I quote, the world knows a lot about Jesus, but do they know him? It is for the churches to seize this moment, to take the vague spirituality of the day and turn it into a faith that is solid and transformative. You know, I have to say, I agree. But I'm not sure that
the guy running our polling system should be talking like this, frankly. Anyhow, he's he graduated from Princeton University with a degree in religion, so I suppose that shouldn't surprise us. And he went on to say this again, George Gallup Jr. People look at churches and they don't see lives being changed. The core is getting mushy. Anything that doesn't lead to Jesus should be cast off. So now the new editor-in-chief of the Gallup poll, George Gallup Jr. is retiring, is Frank Newport. He's the vice president of the New Jersey organization. His father, by the way, John Newport, served more than 40 years as a philosophy of religion professor and administration and administrator at Southwest Baptist Theological Seminary. The Gallup polls, well, you'll recall in the last election, Al Gore won the popular vote by 500,000 more votes than George W. Bush, the largest electoral vote, popular vote in the history of the United States. Gallup had called that wrong. It seems that they're asking more Republicans than Democrats who they support. And then when they get a lot of, then when the results come out that, it's the Republicans who are, there seems to be more people in favor of George Bush. Time will tell. Time will tell, won't it? 1-866-889-8894. Let's take a few phone calls here. Tony in Grand Rapids, Michigan is on the line. Hey, Tony, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Great.
I've just been trying to call in for a long time, and mostly I just want to talk about the national security thing that George Bush does. Like, Kerry won't do national security.
Yeah.
And basically, George Bush is running on the fact that he's better at securing this nation because we were attacked while he was in office.
Yeah. Figure out the logic of that. He's better at making our nation safe because while he was on his watch, when he was warned that Al-Qaeda was going to attack inside the United States, he did absolutely nothing and allowed 9/11 to happen, and therefore we will be safer with him in office, right?
He went on vacation.
Yeah, and he stayed on vacation, and then he went down to Florida to read My Pet Goat.
Yep, and then after the election, to counter anti-terrorism, he cut the FBI's anti-terrorism budget by 2/3.
Yep. And from the time that Dick Cheney became vice president until 9/11, Dick Cheney, who George Bush had put in charge of counterterrorism, in charge of the counterterrorism task force, the task force met exactly zero times. Zero. Yeah, these guys are definitely going to keep us safer.
One more big point I have about George Bush is here in Michigan, the person who ran for senator during the last election for senator we had here was Senator Abraham. And while serving as a U.S. senator, he... one of his biggest things was to get rid of the Department of Energy, and he is now Secretary of Energy.
I know. I interviewed him on this program, in fact, from the RNC a couple of weeks ago. I got to say, Spencer Abraham seemed like a decent enough guy, but as soon as I started, when I was questioning him, as soon as I got into the Cheney energy policy meetings, his Secret Service handler came over and told Louise, who's the producer of the program, was sitting next to me, said, he's got to get off the air right now. And we got cut off. They wouldn't allow him to talk with me anymore. It was very strange. Tony, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Thanks for listening to us there on WTKG in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Let's see. Line 2, Aaron in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Aaron, what's up?
Oh, not much, Tom. How are you?
Great.
I need your opinion on something. I need to know whether I should be worried or not. Aside from just in general.
Okay, good luck.
My wife has gotten on some insidious mailing list from the GOP, mm-hmm. and she's been getting campaign literature. And I guess the problem is all of the campaign literature comes with absentee ballot fill-out forms. Should we be concerned that our votes aren't going to be counted because they're sending out these forms to GOP people, and I haven't seen any from Kerry?
You know, down in Florida, in fact, the GOP has sent an email to Republicans who are on the email list down there saying that these voting machines are unreliable, and therefore be sure to submit an absentee ballot. The GOP is pushing really hard for this. At the same time, they are fighting Rush Holt's bill in Congress, which would require paper trails for electronic voting machines. Something is up here. Something doesn't smell right. I mean, this, Aaron, it stinks to me. You've got your finger on something. This is something that's going to take a little time to play out. It's one of those kind of things that we don't quite yet have the smoking gun, but I think we're awful close. Bev Harris is certainly very close to it. But, you know, in answer to your question directly, yeah, I think it's something to be concerned about.
Do you think we need to encourage more Democrats to file absentee ballots?
I think that that's a fine thing to do. On the other hand, if the vote is being rigged, if people are messing with the vote, Democrats can mess with them as well as anybody else. Republicans can, whoever's getting the absentee ballots in the mail can mess with them as much as anybody else. Why don't you check it out and call us back? Check out the find out if the Democrats are doing this. You know, call around, call the Republican Party and ask them, are you sending this out because you're concerned and let us know because you're concerned about the machines or something, and let us know what they say.
I will, Tom.
Great. Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Good to hear from you, Aaron. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Tom.
Yep. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number down at the bottom of the hour. We're going to have Jerry Corsi on, the co-author of Unfit for Command, the anti-carry book. Should be entertaining. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio. No, it ain't a train coming, my friends. It's the truth. Stick around.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. We've all heard the phrase, use it or lose it. Well, according to a study just published in the journal Neurology, people with mentally challenging work seem to be less likely to develop Alzheimer's disease than those working in physically demanding jobs. Researchers suggest lifelong stimulus maintains a reserve of brain cells and strengthens connections between neurons.
The last hours of ancient sunlight, the fate of the world, and what we can do before it's too late is Tom Hartman's stunning wake-up call to humanity. Conversations with God author Neil Donald Walsh says this about the book.
Quote it everywhere. Buy 10 books and give them away. Don't let this action go unheard. You may feel like a voice in the wilderness, but it is your voice we're waiting to hear. Yours is the crucial vote. You are the determining factor. We reach critical mass when we reach you, and you choose to reach others with the simple message of this book. Let us act at last in the best interest of all. Then the sun will shine another day, and another still, and life will not merely go on, but achieve its highest expression, its grandest glory, its greatest joy. Can we give this gift to our children? Please say yes.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
The billionaires don't want you to vote. If you're happy with George Bush in charge, if you want to keep us living large, do you really want to rock the boat? Hey, the billionaires don't want you to vote.
Yeah, the billionaires don't want you to vote. Somebody emailed me a billboard this morning, a Clear Channel billboard, in fact, interestingly. All it said was, don't vote. Great big letters. I thought that was... I'm assuming it wasn't Photoshop retouched. It would be interesting to know the story behind it, if anybody has that. Feel free to let me know. Interesting stuff. John Kerry. George W. Bush's hometown newspaper, the Lone Star Iconoclast, in Crawford, Texas, yesterday endorsed John Kerry. Interestingly, I've got the whole editorial here. Perhaps we'll have time to get to it a little later on. Denny Hastert is pushing a bill that would violate the International Convention Against Torture, the UN Convention Against Torture that the United States signed 20 years ago, and would authorize us to deport people to nations that openly practice torture for the purposes of torture. Some interesting political ads on the website whitehouse.org. I don't know if you've seen them. Let me play this one. This is rather entertaining.
I'm George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
As a part-time fighter jet pilot in the Air National Guard, George W. Bush fought hard to defend his home state of Texas from invading swarms of Viet Cong terrorists. John Kerry... He left Massachusetts unprotected, as if a pack of Oriental foreigners was more important than Americans back home. In these terrifying times of terrorizing terror, can America really trust John Kerry not to abandon us again? President Bush, he's not going anywhere.
Yeah, an excellent ad there from whitehouse.org, a fine website I recommend you check out. And we will have, hopefully, John Corzine on the bottom of the hour. We'll be talking about these kinds of issues, as it were. 1-866-889-8894. Chris in Milwaukee's on the line. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to reassure your last caller. I'm doing canvassing for Kerry here in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee. And they are heavily pushing absentee ballots as well.
The Democrats as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But
are you passing them out? Apparently, the Republicans are actually mailing them out to people.
Well, I'm not in any mail campaign. It's canvassing door to door, and basically we either give them an absentee ballot request form, or they can fill it out and we take it in, and then there's some processing that needs to be done at the various city clerk's offices, but we're encouraging it. So
good on you.
Yeah, in Wisconsin, for example, one vote per ward was the deciding factor in the last election. So
amazing.
Everyone needs to make sure they get counted.
And you're out going door to door, Chris. Congratulations. I think that's wonderful. You are the heart and soul of American democracy. Thank you.
What I can, Tom.
Thank you for what you're doing, Chris.
I
salute you. 1-866-889-8894. Our number, Don in Southern California on the line. Hey, Don, what's up?
Hey, thanks so much for your show, Tom. And I really enjoyed the show yesterday.
Thank you.
You know your stuff. I have a question. I have a guy on a job site out here where I'm working at, and he has a sticker on the back of his car that says "Sportsman for Bush." And I want to explain to him about the those mountaintops that were blown off, and I don't have my paperwork on me right now. Can you tell me what I should go to on Google to find those?
You're talking about in West Virginia? Bushgreenwatch.org is the website. They've got the whole story there.
One more time?
Bushgreenwatch.org.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. That's moving right along here. Thank you, Don. Dave in Columbus, Ohio is on the line. Hey, Dave, we've only got about a half a minute here.
Hey, Tom, I just wanted to correct a misconception on that that comment last segment about Bush being asleep at the wheel back in 2001 prior to the 9/11 attack.
Okay.
And that's simply on that PDB, which is what everybody's referring to.
Right.
At the very bottom of it, it says that the FBI had 70 or 77 active investigations into terrorism nationally.
Right.
As the president, that gives him a lot of confidence.
Yeah. So he just sat back and said, "That's cool. The FBI's got this under control. No need to talk to the cabinet about this. No need to go any farther with this."
Don't be disingenuous about your attacks.
Yeah. Right.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Over 1,000 workers are on strike at 4 downtown San Francisco hotels. Represented by Unite Here, Local 2, the hospitality employees vow to stay out for 2 weeks. John Wilhelm, president of the hospitality division, says workers are striking to protect their health and pension benefits, reduce workloads, and for higher pay.
Most important issues being fought about in these cities is the rapid increase in health care costs. In San Francisco, the employers have proposed that by the end of a proposed 5-year contract, San Francisco hotel workers who pay virtually nothing for their health care now would pay $273 per person per month out of pocket, which is totally unaffordable in the wage brackets that exist in our industry. If we're going to have effective bargaining in each of the hotel markets, we've got to figure out how to have a national dialogue on the issues that are the most important.
Despite fierce management resistance, Unite Here wants a 2-year deal to line up contract negotiations with the bulk of the other major union hotels in the U.S., including New York, Chicago, Toronto, Honolulu, and Boston.
A minimum wage referendum placed on the ballot in Florida could change the outcome of the November 2nd presidential election. The measure asks voters to support an increase in the state minimum wage from $5.15 to $6.15 an hour this year, with annual increases connected to inflation. The initiative could bring out voters who normally would not vote because they are turned off by the candidates. Elise Gowdy Wright, director of South Florida Jobs with Justice, organized a coalition of civil rights groups, religious congregations, and labor unions to collect nearly 1 million signatures over a 10-month period.
I think for a lot of folks that are behind this effort, the hope is that because this is such a popular issue and there's so many people who are supportive of it, that it will help with voter turnout.
Gowdy Wright believes increasing the minimum wage will have a positive ripple effect for many Florida workers.
Those folks who make minimum wage will be directly impacted, but those folks who might make slightly higher than minimum wage, many of those employers will feel inclined to raise their wages as well.
The restaurant industry and the Florida Chamber of Commerce are opposing the ballot initiative. George W. Bush opposes raising the national minimum wage from its 1997 level, while John Kerry has expressed support for an increase. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Black men with the same skills as white men are only half as likely to attain management positions. That's according to a new study by Baruch College's School of Public Affairs. Black women, the study says, are only a third as likely to obtain those same management positions. The study finds that the glass ceiling phenomenon, usually associated primarily with women trying to obtain equality in the workplace, has now begun to apply to minorities.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Here comes the billionaire.
The billionaires are in the house.
The billionaires are in the White House. We're dining on pheasants. We're dining on sprouts.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Jerry Corsi. The, let's see, where to go here? Buzzflash, I think it was, says, you know, we're hearing all about John O'Neill. What about Jerry Corsi? And I thought, yeah, let's get this guy on. Jerry, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thanks, Tom. Pleasure to be with you.
Jerry Corsi, you have a PhD in political science from Harvard, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I had it in 1972.
I got to tell you, I'm impressed by that. You're the co-author of the number one best-selling book in America, Unfit for Command, The Attack on John Kerry's Vietnam War Service. You've also made a few controversial comments, as it were, on the Internet. Jerry, it appears to me that what you're really pushing for, correct me if I'm wrong, is basically a white conservative Christian nation. You've got a, and
what I'm pushing for?
Yeah, well, in your comments on the web and things, you know.
My comments on the web were on freerepublic.com.
Right.
And a good deal of those were meant to be controversial, or some of them were humorous. For instance, I got called a anti-Catholic. Well, I'm a devout Catholic. I'm not anti-Catholic at all.
Yeah, so you say...
Those comments were mostly taken out of context.
Okay, well, let's put them back into context then. On March 3rd, sure. You said, maybe while he's there, he can tell the UN what he's going to do about the sexual crimes committed by priests in his church during his tenure. Maybe that's the connection. Boy-buggering in both Islam and Catholicism is okay with the Pope as long as it isn't reported by the liberal press.
Well, let's take the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church has a major crisis going on today with pedophilia
and right.
The clergy. And one of the things I've been mainly concerned about as a Catholic is that the church take the crisis seriously and not put its head in the sand and try to ignore it.
Okay, so you're just using, you could be accused of using crude language, but you're trying to raise a legitimate issue. And I don't disagree with you that that's a legitimate issue.
I'm trying to shock people into saying, you know, let's look at this and take it seriously.
Okay, so then on April 24th, you said this year, you said Islam is a worthless, dangerous, satanic religion. Do you and where is the proof to the contrary? Do you really mean that?
No, I think Islam itself is not a dangerous religion. Certainly, good historical precedent, and it's a long-standing religion. What's dangerous is when Islam gets taken over by this fundamental radicalism, which is set on terrorism and destruction. So
but Jerry, that's not what you said. You said here on the 26th of November, you said Islam is like a virus. It affects the mind. Maybe even a better analogy, it's a cancer that destroys the body and infects. No doctor would hesitate to eliminate cancer cells from the body. And then a few days earlier, you had said Islam is a peaceful religion so long as the women are beaten, the boys buggered, and the infidels killed.
Well, again, you're taking it out of context. If you look at the thread, the comments, that I'm responding to, the ones before and after.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about Islam being captured by this radical extremism. And I'm saying that if that's the case, if that's what Islam becomes, then we've got some real problems with Islam being a legitimate religion. And I've been consistently calling for the responsible voices within Islam to come forward and to repudiate this extreme wing. I'm actually trying to prod again Islam into saying, let's get on with it. Where are the responsible voices of Islam coming forward? Let's not let the world conclude that it's just a dangerous religion, which it does not have to be. So again, you can take it out of context, but what I'm meaning to express there, and those are chat room comments, and they're made to be provocative. I'm trying to stimulate discussion to look at the issue and say that Islam's got to join the responsible religions of the world and say we can't be going into holy wars. I mean, Christianity has had to go through its own reformation and it's got to go through its own period of time where...
You know, Jerry, I've written about the same thing, and Judaism has as well, and so has Hinduism.
Religion.
Yeah, with the exception of Buddhism, all of them have. And you know, yeah, we've got some real problems here, but I've got this long string of quotes from you, and it just doesn't sound like that's what you're saying. I mean, it's a... let's move along.
I'm here to be now, and this is what I believe.
Okay, I'll take you at your word. I'll take you at your word. Hillary Clinton, Hillary, you call her? What? Hillary loves the Arabs so much. Kiss, kiss, Mrs. Arab rat. Wonder how she would look in a burqa? What's this about?
Well, again, if you go back to the context of what I'm saying, I'm pointing at the degree to which Hillary By the way, there was a book written, Hell to Pay, which is where I took that from, Barbara Olson's book. She was killed in one of the airplanes in 9/11. So there's some good references there that I was using in calling her Hillary into that book. That's what I'm referring to. But the point is that there's been an alliance formed, and Arafat has been at the core of it, where the Democratic Party, many of them, Hillary included, have not demanded the same standards from Arafat as they have of others around the world.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking here. You've got, for example, Mullah Ali Gorah is very proud of the new Bin Laden beard, and he hopes others in the Democratic Party will follow his lead. Hillary is disappointed she cannot grow a beard, but her press secretary reminds us she can still enroll in flight school. And then he said, "Let the fat hog run." I mean,
you're dealing with again right after 9/11. And if nobody has a sense of humor, I'm sure everybody could be offended by all kinds of things.
Actually, the "Let the Fat Hog Run" was 2 years after 9/11.
If they were offended, because I'm wanting to stimulate thought again, I'm wanting to get responses from people.
Okay, so you're trying to stimulate thought. Let's talk about the Swift votes then. You've certainly stimulated thought with that, and you've gotten a lot of press for it. Did you serve in Vietnam?
No, I when I was in my draft physical, I've had hereditary eczema all my life. I was told my skin wasn't good enough to kill Viet Cong. So I got a PhD at Harvard, and I specialized in the anti-war movement, anti-terrorism. I ended up in 1981 with a top secret clearance for some work I did. I published a paper on a computer model predicting the outcome of terrorist events in 1981.
Yeah, we're talking.
I served by doing that work.
Okay, we're talking with Jerry Corsi, the co-author of "Unfit for Command." Jerry, in my world, it takes a lot of courage for somebody to stand up for their country during a time of war, to enlist, and it takes a lot of courage to stand up against the leadership of their country when they're thinking that they're making a mistake, particularly during time of war. John Kerry did both. George Bush did neither. Why are you going after this guy?
Well, in terms of what John Kerry did in Vietnam, taking that one first, what we said in Unfit for Command was that his statements about what he did were exaggerated and many of them were lies. Take, for example, this Christmas in Cambodia, which he claimed he was sent in there by Richard Nixon in December 1968 into Cambodia, and that's how Kerry knew it was an illegal war.
Jerry, we've heard this to death. You know, I'm asking the question, why are you going after the guy who actually volunteered for two tours of duty when you've got another guy who didn't even show up, who was too drunk to show up? I mean, I don't get it.
I'm trying to explain. The anti-war protests, even the research I did two major studies in the Vietnam Veterans Against the War in the 70s, and what was clear was that Kerry had crossed the line. He was working with the Viet Cong in Paris, while he was yet a Naval Reserve officer, and the whole Vietnam Veterans Against the War movement. There were many in there who were never Vietnam veterans, never veterans at all, but claiming to be.
You know, according to the FBI report, there was no evidence, quote, from the FBI, no evidence of communist involvement with Vietnam Veterans Against the War, end quote. You're familiar with that report.
That's not correct. If you take a look at the FBI reports that are cited in the book and are on wintersoldier.com in raw data form, Al Hubbard's trips to Paris, he was the associate of John Kerry.
But Jerry, why aren't you guys talking about George Bush, too? Is it because George Bush was supportive of the war even though he was unwilling to fight in it?
Well, the book is not at all about George Bush. It's entirely directed against John Kerry. The Swift Boat veterans came together not in support of George Bush, but in opposition to John Kerry.
Okay, let's take some calls.
That does not mean that they're supporting Bush. There's no agreement among the Swift Boat vets that they... If John Kerry had not been the candidate, the group would never have come together.
Okay, 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number if you'd like to call in and talk to John Corsi. Am I pronouncing it correct?
Yeah, it's
or Jerry, funny. I'm sorry. Jerry, I keep thinking John O'Neill. Jerry Corsi.
Sorry, it's John O'Neill. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, fine. Jerry Corsi, 1-866-889-8894. Our first caller, Dave in Humboldt County, California, is on the line. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Jerry, I think it's always wonderful when good people get involved and try to assure honest government. I wonder if, as an example, if Kerry did get elected and he started awarding all kinds of massive illegal contracts to corporations that were donating money to him, Is that the kind of thing you'd want to do something about?
Well, I'm concerned with John Kerry and what his book came about was that he basically had betrayed the Vietnam military in the field of battle when he gave his testimony to the Senate in 71 and called them all war criminals.
In other words, no. In other words, no. In other words, if John Kerry became president and started handing off contracts to his buddies, that wouldn't bother you. What you're upset about is what he did 35 years ago.
Well, I'm not going to. There's no basis of knowing that he's going to come into office and hand out contracts to his buddies, so I'm going to not answer that part
of
the question.
Okay, it's a hypothetical. I'll give you that. Jerry, Billy in Santa Cruz, California on the line. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Billy, welcome to the program. You're live with Jerry Corsi. I think it's Billy.
Is he there?
Yeah, maybe. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's Deidre in Michigan. No? Huh. Let me put that line on hold, and let's see what we have here. Is this Deidre in Michigan?
Yes.
Okay, Deidre, welcome to the program. Billy must be listening to the time delay there. We'll go back to him in a second, see if he's still there. Anyhow, you're on the air live.
Yes, I wanted to ask the gentleman you're interviewing. He's not a veteran, and he didn't serve in the war. But he seems to be preoccupied with the actions of those who did. And it's just like I get the idea of armchair quarterback. It's much easier to sit on the sideline and criticize those who did go out and fight and risk their lives defending their country. Then, you know, I don't understand how you get all these men who weren't brave enough or weren't able to do that who can sit and be armchair quarterbacks of those who did. I mean, deferment Dick, our vice president, got 5 draft deferments, but he supported Vietnam. It seems like, oh, gee, well, he was just a coward. He supported Vietnam, thought people should die in it, but not him. George Bush, a coward, thought people should die in Vietnam, but not him. And I'm just wondering if this man was in support of the Vietnam War and was just a coward.
No, his skin was too bad.
Or not supportive of the war, and if he's not supportive of the war, then why wouldn't he be equally critical of Bush and Cheney for not fighting in it?
Good question, Jerry.
Well, the first of all, the book, John O'Neill, who's my co-author, was a veteran. He was in the Swift boats, and the 260 approximately Swift boat veterans who signed the letter that's in the book saying John Kerry's not fit for command, they were all veterans. And the book is really their story.
Jerry, how come, Jerry, how come all of the guys who actually were in the boat with John Kerry are traveling around the country with him, totally supporting him? And you've got all these guys who, you know, in fact, your first ad, you had one guy who says, I was in Vietnam with John Kerry. The guy had never even been near him. He just happened to be in Vietnam at the same time. The disingenuousness of this, I think, has put a bad taste in the mouths of a lot of people. It seems like you guys are liars.
Yeah, it does seem that way because, oh, gee, I was in Vietnam at the same time John Kerry was. I never met him, but, you know, that seems ridiculous. And then the people on the Swift boats who did work with him support him. So it just makes you guys look like you're not telling the truth.
If you let me answer that, Tom.
Sure.
It's not true that all the guys on the boat with him do support him. Steve Gardner, who was on the boat with John Kerry the longest of any of them, is strongly opposed to him and is in the book Unfit for Command.
Yeah, 1 out of 9. 1 guy out of 9.
Secondly,
the other 8 guys are traveling around the country with him.
Secondly, of the 250, it includes the vast majority of the commanders of John Kerry, and these Swift boats were not like. It was like a squadron of airplanes.
Yeah, I know. We've heard all this. We've heard all this, you know, ad nauseum. But
I probably know
they were all
about
operating
you,
in the
you
field
do.
Together.
Yeah.
And they observed each other. And the command structure of John Kerry is saying he's unfit for command.
Yeah, okay. You know, we've heard this to death, Jerry. I mean, you know, yeah. I'm sorry. Deidre, do you want to make a final point? I got a couple more calls here I got to move along to, and we're running out of time.
Right. I just, I've had family who was in Vietnam, actually on both sides, and I've had those who were very patriotic and who were against the war movement. And I've had family member who was in Vietnam who lost a limb and who was very much active when they got back in the war movement. And while they disagree and argue, they all have respect for each other as veterans. I think that the respect that is due a veteran, you have not given John Kerry, and I think that makes you a very unpatriotic American. Thank you.
Thank you, Deidre. Well, let's go to Billy in Santa Cruz if he's there. Billy, you there now?
I'm here, Betty.
Okay, go for it.
Well, I just wanted to know from your guest that When he discovered he was a liar, is that when he discovered he was a Republican?
Come on, Billy, that's a cheap shot.
Of course it's a cheap shot, but I mean, isn't the whole campaign a cheap shot?
Yeah, but
they begin the cheap shots, this Veterans for Lies.
Yeah, but you're not gonna win an argument by calling names. I mean,
I don't want to win the argument. I just want to show everybody out there that there's some of us who aren't going to play nice with avowed liars.
Okay, point well made. 1-866-889-8894. Pat in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We got about a minute left here. Pat, your comment, and then we'll give Jerry the last word.
Yeah, I just want to make a comment about all these things they say John Kerry said he did, like free fire zones, using 50-caliber machine guns on civilians, and burning hoochies. I mean, this was all common practice over there. Free fire zones, everybody did it.
Are you speaking from firsthand experience, Pat?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
All right, great.
We're in Cambodia a lot, in and out across the border. That's no big deal either. I don't know why that's such a big thing.
Well, it seems to have Jerry all upset. Jerry, we got 10 seconds here. Your final words.
The book is based on affidavits, so there's sworn testimony in the book. And secondly, free fire zones were not a criminal practice, and war crimes were not a common event in Vietnam.
Okay, Jerry Corzai, thank you very much for your comments. The book's Unfit for Command. Tom Hartman here with you 10 minutes before the hour.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channel?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. Add $4.99 a month per second in each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call
now. It's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Critics say that when we consolidate the media into fewer and fewer hands, it threatens diversity. Nothing could be further from the truth. Every demographic has different consuming habits. With 500 channels, we'll have one shopping network for Elvis memorabilia and another for the dogs playing poker crowd. Something for everyone. In this spirit, we billionaires are buying up the airwaves. If you're on a road trip from Kennebunkport to Crawford, you can tune into Rush the whole trip down. Just think, the same country and soft rock stations everywhere you go. And what we leave off the dial, you're better off without, really. Aren't you glad someone's protecting you from polka music? You're welcome. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here comes the Billionaire!
Hi, I'm David Orrick. Do you have a dust mask? Well, if you use a bagless vacuum and you're sensitive to dust, a leading consumer magazine products testing magazine warns you should wear a dust mask. But here's a better idea. Try my newest hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL risk-free for 30 days. It uses triple-walled disposable filter bags. Try emptying a bagless vacuum and see what happens. Dust gets all over your hands and face and back into the room and on the kitchen counter. And you get to breathe it in? I believe a vacuum should capture the dust, not your lungs. That's why with my Auric XL, the filter bags are self-sealing. What goes in the bag stays in the bag, even when you empty it. So try my hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200. Then if you still want a bagless vacuum, I'll send you a dust mask to wear.
Scientists say the Arctic is warming faster than any other place on Earth. The locals are noticing the change. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Water cooler conversation always includes the weather, but in Alaska these days, the subject gets more attention than usual.
We've been having a summer which is just extraordinary. It has been so hot and so dry, it's been record-breaking.
That's Charles Woolforth, a lifelong resident of Alaska and author of a new book, The Whale and the Supercomputer. Woolforth says the North's changing weather is obvious all year in his hometown of Anchorage. Earlier springs, hotter summers, and milder winters, including a record setter 2 years ago. But Woolforth says the transition becomes more apparent in the colder parts of the state, and he says Alaska's Native people are most affected.
Going farther north into the Arctic, the changes become much more extreme and pronounced, and the people are much more closely connected with the land, and so they have a very deep perception of what's happening. And their changes include extreme thinning and reduction in sea ice, warming of permafrost so that the frozen ground is less reliable and in some areas is thawed completely.
Woolforth says that thawing even affects the course of rivers and vegetation on the tundra. He says the North's changing climate is disrupting the native Inupiat way of life, which includes subsistence whale hunting on the ice.
The whole complex of very major changes that are all interrelated and interlinked, and it's almost disorienting for people to live in a world where nature is changing so fast.
That's Charles Woolforth, author of The Whale and the Supercomputer. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Yes, indeed. Jerry Corsi, we unwilling to go to the bigger picture, unwilling to discuss the real issues. Always, you know, well, let's talk about it in a little details here about this. It's really pathetic. Yeah, Billy, you're right. These guys are liars. And this is, here is, I wanted to end with John Kerry himself and his testimony, which is being attacked by these guys, that they are using to say that he said, everybody was a war criminal, blah-de-blah. John Kerry. A few months ago in Detroit.
We had an investigation at which over 150 honorably discharged and many very highly decorated veterans testified to war crimes committed in Southeast Asia. Not isolated incidents, but crimes committed on a day-to-day basis with the full awareness of officers at all levels of command. It's impossible to describe to you exactly what did happen in Detroit, the emotions in the room, the feelings of the men who were reliving their experiences in Vietnam. But they did. They relived the absolute horror of what this country, in a sense, made them do.
This is so the key to it all. John Kerry's work after the war was about holding the civilians accountable, about holding Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger accountable, about holding the Secretary of Defense accountable. I'm forgetting his name right now. Anyhow, who later apologized for the Vietnam? Who later apologized for the Vietnam War, and just saying, you know, it wasn't the soldiers' fault; they were following orders.
They told the stories of times that they had personally raped, cut off ears, cut off heads, taped wires from portable telephones to human genitals, and turned up the power. Cut off limbs, blown up bodies, randomly shot at civilians, razed villages in a fashion reminiscent of Genghis Khan, shot cattle and dogs for fun, poisoned food stocks, and generally ravaged the countryside of South Vietnam, in addition to the normal ravage of war and the normal and very particular ravaging which is done by the applied bombing power of this country.
And then he gets
we called this investigation the Winter Soldier Investigation. A term winter soldier is a play on words of Thomas Paine's in 1776 when he spoke of the sunshine patriot and summertime soldiers who deserted at Valley Forge because the going was rough.
And the going got rough, and John Kerry stepped up to the plate and said, "There's something wrong with this war, and help stop it and save the lives of American soldiers." That's a good thing in my mind. I honor him for that. 2 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Over 1,000 workers are on strike at 4 downtown San Francisco hotels. Represented by Unite Here, Local 2, the hospitality employees vow to stay out for 2 weeks. John Wilhelm, president of the hospitality division, says workers are striking to protect their health and pension benefits, reduce workloads, and for higher pay.
Most important issues being fought about in these cities is the rapid increase in health care costs. In San Francisco, the employers have proposed that by the end of a proposed 5-year contract, San Francisco hotel workers who pay virtually nothing for their health care now would pay $273 per person per month out of pocket, which is totally unaffordable in the wage brackets that exist in our industry. If we're going to have effective bargaining in each of the hotel markets, we've got to figure out how to have a national dialogue on the issues that are the most important.
Despite fierce management resistance, Unite Here wants a 2-year deal to line up contract negotiations with the bulk of the other major union hotels in the U.S., including New York, Chicago, Toronto, Honolulu, and Boston.
A minimum wage referendum placed on the ballot in Florida could change the outcome of the November 2nd presidential election. The measure asks voters to support an increase in the state minimum wage from $5.15 to $6.15 an hour this year, with annual increases connected to inflation. The initiative could bring out voters who normally would not vote because they are turned off by the candidates. Elise Gowdy Wright, director of South Florida Jobs with Justice, organized a coalition of civil rights groups, religious congregations, and labor unions to collect nearly 1 million signatures over a 10-month period.
I think for a lot of folks that are behind this effort, the hope is that because this is such a popular issue and there's so many people who are supportive of it, that it will help with voter turnout.
Gowdy Wright believes increasing the minimum wage will have a positive ripple effect for many Florida workers.
Those folks who make minimum wage will be directly impacted, but those folks who might make slightly higher than minimum wage, many of those employers will feel inclined to raise their wages as well.
The restaurant industry and the Florida Chamber of Commerce are opposing the ballot initiative. George W. Bush opposes raising the national minimum wage from its 1997 level, while John Kerry has expressed support for an increase. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Black men with the same skills as white men are only half as likely to attain management positions. That's according to a new study by Baruch College's School of Public Affairs. Black women, the study says, are only a third as likely to obtain those same management positions. The study finds that the glass ceiling phenomenon, usually associated primarily with women trying to obtain equality in the workplace, has now begun to apply to minorities.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Mr. and Mrs. Green, let's talk about ways to grow your wealth.
Where can we get the highest return with the lowest risk?
These days, elections.
We don't usually get involved in politics.
Well, consider this. Over the past 4 years, the pharmaceutical sector turned $44 million in contributions into Medicare legislation worth $139 billion in profits.
Not
excellent.
Bad.
Who shall we make the check out to?
Want to protect your outrageous wealth? Invest in the right candidate.
Easily paid for by billionaires for Bush.
Get ready for the storm surge. I don't mean the floodwaters from the horrific hurricanes that have been battering our country, but the surge of clothing and textiles flooding into our land from China, drowning what remains of our own industry and wiping out entire American communities. But don't blame the Chinese. Such U.S. retailers as Walmart, Gap, and Nike led the rush to China years ago to build that country's now booming textile industry on the backs of dirt-cheap labor, including sweatshops, child labor, and forced labor. It was these same corporations that pushed U.S. politicians to go along with the creation of the sovereignty-busting outfit called the World Trade Organization. The secretive autocratic WTO, based in Geneva, has established global corporate rule over our jobs, farms, environment, food, and even our laws. If, for example, we pass quotas and other laws to ensure the economic well-being of our textile families and towns, the manufacturers in China can run to the WTO and overrule our laws. This, in essence, is what has happened. And next year, our clothing and textile markets will be thrown wide open to a tsunami of Chinese-produced goods. American families stand to lose 600,000 more manufacturing jobs as a result. Meanwhile, Chinese workers are not benefiting. Wages are reported to be falling even as productivity rises, and Walmart, Gap, Nike, and the rest laugh all the way to the bank. Now, in this political year, the politicians are scrambling, putting out all sorts of hot rhetoric to try to cover the fact that they are the ones who opened the gates with their blind support of the WTO. Feebly, the Bush White House is reduced to pleading with Chinese officials to voluntarily restrict their clothing exports to the U.S. No, say Chinese officials, noting that to do so would be, quote, a breach of the WTO. This is Jim Hightower saying, our own corporate and political leaders sold America out to the WTO.
The Chicago Underground Daily calls it an amazing cinematic wonder, spellbinding.
My daughter, I'm not sure if I can make it.
Father, you must remain strong, for I bring good news.
Oh, you bring good news?
Yes, I just save a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
But who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's. Know who's really gelling? The King of Queens, Monday through Friday. Check your local listings.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast and beaming around the planet. On radiopower.org, our chat room full up, interesting conversations. You can get there from TomHartman.com. The White House today issuing a President Bush never was disciplined while serving in the Texas Air National Guard. This is what his good old what's his name, the press secretary, Scott McClellan. Is saying this. This is really weird. Why are they denying that he was disciplined while serving in the Texas Air National Guard when nobody has asserted that he was? Could it be that it's another disinformation campaign? Might be. They go on to say he never failed a physical. No, that's because he didn't take it. And he never asked his father or family friends for help. No, of course he didn't. His father did it for him. But these three facts are being reported by the Associated Press today. Straight up, President Bush never was disciplined while serving in the Texas Air National Guard, never failed a physical, and never asked his father or family friends for help to get him into the Guard during the Vietnam War, the White House said Wednesday. Meanwhile, the White House on Wednesday night produced a newly unearthed document on Bush's Guard service 7 months after it said all materials on the subject had been publicly released. The new document was a copy of Bush's resignation in 1974, declaring he was leaving the Guard because of, quote, inadequate time to fulfill possible future commitments, end quote. Well, all of you who are in the National Guard within the sound of my voice, and I know we have listeners in the Middle East, I guess, you know, all you have to do is just say, you know, the President of the United States said, all I've got to do is resign because I have inadequate time to fulfill possible future commitments, and that's enough. I mean, if it was good enough for George, maybe it should be good enough for you. Anyhow, let's move on to the so-called debate that's going to happen tonight. Jeff Milchen, one of America's true patriots, in my opinion, an extraordinary man. Jeff Milchen directs ReclaimDemocracy.org. One of the most useful websites out there, ReclaimDemocracy.org, a nonprofit organization working to restore citizen authority over corporations and revitalize American democracy. He's also the co-founder and board member of the new Citizens Debate Commission, created to provide more informative, engaging, and truly nonpartisan political debates. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on, Tom. Thanks for the flattering introduction.
Well, we just had Jerry Corsi. I guess anything is better than that, but... another cheap shot. I have my New Year's resolution was no more cheap shots, but boy, is it tough. Anyway, Jeff, tonight we're going to have basically dueling press conferences. Disagree?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, the Commission on Presidential Debates, which is a private nonprofit corporation owned and operated by the Democratic and Republican parties, when it created this institution, those leaders framed it exactly that way. They specifically said they will be joint campaign appearances by the nominees of the two major parties. So before they started feeling the heat from outside pressure, they were quite out in the open about the fact that their goal was to control the debates for the benefit of two parties rather than for the benefit of the public. And that's certainly what they've done effectively since 1988 now.
And you're going to take this on?
Well, earlier this year, a new, truly nonpartisan and independent body, the Citizens Debate Commission, was formed. It's a campaign that ReclaimDemocracy.org had been active in helping build for many years. And it came to fruition, including representation from a huge range of organizations from all over the political compass, from Alan Keyes, to Tom Fitton, the president of Judicial Watch on the right-hand side, to representatives of Common Cause, of Friends of the Earth, and organizations that truly represent a constituency as broad as the American electorate, as opposed to serving the interests of the two major parties.
Right. And this organization has done what?
Well, our goal ultimately is to replace the Commission on Presidential Debates. Now, that we knew from the outset that wasn't likely to happen in the first year of operation. It's going to be a long-term battle, and the circumstances this year made it especially challenging, where there was a relatively well-known, high-profile challenger perceived to be a greater threat to the Democrats in the person of Ralph Nader, without having a strong conservative candidate like Pat Buchanan, as we did in 2000, which would have made it a more kind of balanced campaign, at least perceived that way, though our intentions are purely to revitalize the democratic process. But what has happened already are a couple of significant changes. First, the 32-page memorandum of understanding between Bush and Kerry that laid out control over the debates down to the most minute details of height of the podiums and angle of the podium,
temperature of the room,
and of course, control over the format of the debates was made public for the first time.
Uh-huh.
So that's led to much more critical coverage in the press in the past several days than we've seen in years past. Also, we've seen a move from having a single moderator, Jim Lehrer, who is repeatedly proven his unwillingness to challenge any of the candidates and sees himself as facilitating their joint press conference rather than actually...
Well, it goes beyond that. I mean, you know, facilitating their BS, frankly, if you'll forgive the expression. I mean, the people put out statements that Jim Lehrer knows are not true.
Yep. And he proved he's unwilling to challenge the candidates when they either stretch the truth or evade the questions.
Yeah.
So this year there are four different moderators. Hopefully that'll lead to a little higher level of facilitation. And also there's much more leeway this year than in years past for follow-up questions. Now, whether or not these moderators take advantage of that power remains to be seen, but those are a few of the positive steps that have been taken as a result of moving from what I would say a reactive damage control position that has been the outlook in years past, where people said, not let's challenge the Citizens Debate Commission and replace it with an independent party, but the message in years past was let Pat Buchanan debate or let Ralph debate, inherently ceding power to really an illegitimate institution.
Right. So you're going after the institution itself rather than you know what, you know, great strategy. And you think the existence of the Citizens Debate Commission and the pressure that you have brought to bear on this has already created some change?
Absolutely. That's been a key factor behind driving that change.
Is there a website where people can find out more about this, Jeff?
Well, there are a few. It's on reclaimdemocracy.org. The lead story right now is the latest op-ed we've published on the topic, which provides a great deal of information. We have about a dozen other pages with some interesting background. Opendebates.org also has a great wealth of information. And the website of the Citizens Debate Commission is simply citizensdebate.org, which has more just kind of dry factual information about the commission itself.
Yeah. Okay. So reclaimdemocracy.org is the place to start for this stuff, and apparently, and Jeff, tell me the story. We're talking with Jeff Milchen, who is the director of ReclaimDemocracy.org and co-founder and board member of the new Citizens Debate Commission. The League of Women Voters played a big role in the debates for a long time, and then all of a sudden, poof, they were gone. I've read different accounts over the years, some that said that basically they got all in a huff because the parties or the candidates wouldn't go along with their particular rules, and they just said, you know, that's it, we're out of here. And I've heard other stories that have suggested that essentially they were pushed out primarily by the two major political parties. What really happened?
Well, the League presented the presidential debates for several election cycles through 1984. Mm-hmm. In 1987, the Democratic and Republican parties got together and decided that it would be more advantageous to them to control the debates directly rather than have a publicly interested and nonpartisan organization doing them.
Sure.
So the next year, in 1988, the two major party candidates went to greater extremes than ever before in trying to control every detail of the debate and basically make the League of Women Voters little more than a name to give them legitimacy and hide the degree of manipulation behind controlling the debates.
Why didn't the League fight that? I mean, why didn't the League just say...
Well, they did. And they did their best to work directly with the major party candidates, but ultimately they find they really didn't have the power to combat it. And so what they did is they removed themselves from the debates and made a very, very forceful public statement.
Yeah, I recall that.
In attempts to try to rile up the public to react against it. They said in their press release in 1988, quote, "We have no intention of becoming an accessory to the hoodwinking of the American people."
Right, right. But
when they resigned.
But all of this this history raises the, you know, a very real and important question, I think, here, and that is, Jeff, your Citizens Debate Commission that you guys are putting together, and, you know, and that all of our listeners can participate in. And by the way, if anybody has any questions for Jeff, we have another three minutes or so here in this segment. Our number 1-866-889-8894. What makes you think you won't find yourself in the exact same position as the League?
Well, the key thing here is putting together an extremely broad coalition. And, you know, I mentioned a few of the folks who are on the board of directors of the Citizens Debate Commission. There are more than a dozen very prominent national organizations represented on the board and 60 more organizations on the advisory board that support the effort. So rather than just the League of Voters, we'll have an extremely broad-reaching coalition that between us has over 100 million members that can help put pressure on the major parties. So it's going to be a much more powerful base to combat the extreme obvious power of the two major parties.
Do you think that the League did not reach out to allies like you're doing because they wanted to maintain their own "we're the League, this is our thing"-ness, or did they try and they weren't successful, or you know, is there a lesson in this?
You know, I wish I could tell you a little bit more. Unfortunately, folks within the League have not been extremely open about sharing their experiences with us, and declined to participate in the Citizens Debate Commission for whatever reason. So I won't try to speculate about, you know, their motivations and challenges.
Yeah.
But our focus, you know, is on creating a broad power base to combat the major party power.
I guess it's absolutely.
Results, you know, not just in more fair and open criteria for third-party candidates, which has been one of the largest focus in news coverage in previous years, but also expanding the range of discussion.
Yeah, I mean, we need to hold these people accountable. From your website, you hear you have in the 2000 elections, the word working class was never once uttered. The word homelessness was never once uttered. The word poverty was mentioned once. Corporate crime, white-collar crime, never once uttered. The word prisons, never once mentioned. The World Trade Organization, not once mentioned during the presidential debates of 2000. And yet, these are the issues of our lives. We've been talking with Jeff Milchen. Jeff is the director of ReclaimDemocracy.org, a co-founder and board member of the new Citizens Debate Commission. Jeff, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
My pleasure. You can find out more about the Citizens Debate Commission by going to ReclaimDemocracy.org on the internet, and I encourage you to get involved. This is a great organization. Tom Hartman here with you, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers. Instead of sitting on hold, speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers. Instead of sitting on hold with tech support,
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsville.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. In vacuums, bagless is a dirty word. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. And if you own one, they advise you to wear a vacuums. Bagless is a dirty word. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. And if you own one, they advise you to wear a dust mask. I would never put the Oric name on a bagless vacuum. They're filthy. My hypoallergenic Oric XL uses triple-walled, disposable filter bags. They hold four times more than the leading brand of bagless vacuums. What goes in the Oric bag stays in the bag, including bacteria and viruses. Empty a bagless vacuum, and the dust goes right back into the...
There's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom gets to the edge of knowing...
On average, 31% less than workers in the retail sector as a whole.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace.
The last liberal outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
We found a better way of making it seem clean. We built an electronic voting machine, and then we sold these suckers nationwide. But we're the only ones who know what's on the inside. You push the buttons and our voting machine keeps track. We made it so it's very easy to hack. Call for a recount, it will probably fail, because our machines don't leave no paper trail.
Interesting story in the USA Today. Mysterious touchscreen voting machine found in Annapolis, Maryland. Members of the State Board of Elections were surprised to hear reports Tuesday that Diebold touchscreen voting machines similar to those used in Maryland were found abandoned recently on a street and in a bar in Baltimore. Board member Joan Beck said, it takes your breath away. Asked about the possible origin of the machine, Tory, who is one of the election officials, says, you can buy one on eBay. Could it be that somebody bought one of these machines in order to take it apart? It takes your breath away. Asked about the possible origin of the machine, Tory, who is one of the election officials, says, you can buy one on eBay. Could it be that somebody bought one of these machines in order to take it apart, figure out how to hack them? Could it be? Who knows? 1-866-889-8894, telephone number, Jim in Salt Lake City on the line. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Thank you, sir. I have three comments I'd like to make. Number one, and it's regarding the debates or this facade tonight.
Yes.
Number one, I'll be honest, I don't trust the television stations to really have live, you know, time-wise, broadcast. I almost expect them, especially a station like Fox, with their, you know, their how they have their people standing by their side, commentators.
Yeah.
That what they'll do is they'll have a delay. They'll watch the real thing, and if it looks like Kerry is making too strong a point, when he comes on to be broadcast, they will. His voice will go into the background, and they'll start talking.
Well, that's
up to hard questions.
Yeah.
But after this debate tonight, they will pull out.
Well, I don't think they're going to pull out. And what they did was they said, okay, we'll go with the town meeting, but we get to pick who the people are who are going to ask the questions. And
it was one way or another rig it.
Yeah, in other words, it was rigged, yeah.
Well, this thing is just another example of the flim-flam artists that these people are.
Well, it's a tragedy. It's a real tragedy. What we've been seeing ever since, I'd say in large part, ever since 1978 in the Boston versus Bilotti Supreme Court decision that basically said that cash is a form of free speech and that corporations can participate in the political process with their money, is that we've seen this explosion, this absolute, I mean, it's been a multiplier effect ever since 1978 in the Boston versus Bilotti Supreme Court decision that basically said that cash is a form of free speech and that corporations can participate in the political process with their money, is that we've seen this explosion, this absolute, I mean, it's been a multiplier effect. Every 4 years, the elections, you know, this year it's going to be $1 billion spent in the media. I mean, this is a huge cash cow for the radio and TV industry. So they go along with it, of course, you know, and it helps them. And it's just, you're seeing the effects of cash, the corrupting, could be $1 billion spent in the media. I mean, this is a huge cash cow for the radio and TV industry. And you know, so they go along with it, of course, you know, and it helps them. And it's just, you're seeing the effects of cash, the corrosive, corrupting influence of cash in the political process.
I think the final result was our own government, our former government wound up imploding.
Well, I think we need to take it back. We're at a Franklin Roosevelt moment. We really very much need to, as Franklin Roosevelt said, our allegiance to democracy requires the overthrow of this kind of power. And he was speaking specifically about corporate power over politics. And
well,
we're back there again.
He's
turning out the other way around. The unelected corporations are the ones running the show. I mean, virtually all the legislation these days gets written by corporations, lobbyists and lawyers for corporations. And this, as I've said many times, this is the dictionary definition of fascism, corporate state.
I disagree with you. I call it the neo-communist.
Well, okay. On your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Over 1,000 workers are on strike at 4 downtown San Francisco hotels. Represented by Unite Here, Local 2, the hospitality employees vow to stay out for 2 weeks. John Wilhelm, president of the hospitality division, says workers are striking to protect their health and pension benefits, reduce workloads, and for higher pay.
Most important issues being fought about in these cities is the rapid increase in health care costs. In San Francisco, the employers have proposed that by the end of a proposed 5-year contract, San Francisco hotel workers who pay virtually nothing for their health care now would pay $273 per person per month out of pocket, which is totally unaffordable in the wage brackets that exist in our industry. If we're going to have effective bargaining in each of the hotel markets, we've got to figure out how to have a national dialogue on the issues that are the most important.
Despite fierce management resistance, Unite Here wants a 2-year deal to line up contract negotiations with the bulk of the other major union hotels in the U.S., including New York, Chicago, Toronto, Honolulu, and Boston.
A minimum wage referendum placed on the ballot in Florida could change the outcome of the November 2nd presidential election. The measure asks voters to support an increase in the state minimum wage from $5.15 to $6.15 an hour this year, with annual increases connected to inflation. The initiative could bring out voters who normally would not vote because they are turned off by the candidates. Elise Gowdy Wright, director of South Florida Jobs with Justice, organized a coalition of civil rights groups, religious congregations, and labor unions to collect nearly 1 million signatures over a 10-month period.
I think for a lot of folks that are behind this effort, the hope is that because this is such a popular issue and there's so many people who are supportive of it, that it will help with voter turnout.
Gowdy Wright believes increasing the minimum wage will have a positive ripple effect for many Florida workers.
Those folks who make minimum wage will be directly impacted, but those folks who might make slightly higher than minimum wage, many of those employers will feel inclined to raise their wages as well.
The restaurant industry and the Florida Chamber of Commerce are opposing the ballot initiative. George W. Bush opposes raising the national minimum wage from its 1997 level, while John Kerry has expressed support for an increase. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Black men with the same skills as white men are only half as likely to attain management positions. That's according to a new study by Baruch College's School of Public Affairs. Black women, the study says, are only a third as likely to obtain those same management positions. The study finds that the glass ceiling phenomenon, usually associated primarily with women trying to obtain equality in the workplace, has now begun to apply to minorities.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You want to win the game, you got to make the rules. We stole an election right in front of you fools. A terror alert system got you on your knees while we're picking your pockets and snatching your cheese. We got the USA by its curly short hair, so look out below, here come the billionaire.
Ah, here come the billionaires. Billionaires for Bush.
In the White House, we're sucking your blood.
With their new rap music. Welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The so-called debates tonight, interesting events, what the president will say, what you should know. In a few minutes, I'll be sharing some of those things with you. There are some statements that I think we can predict. You know, we can put on our prediction hat and say, there's no way George Bush is going to avoid saying this. I want to share some of these things with you and share the facts that will prepare you for listening to the nonsense and BS that's going to be flying out of the TV tonight I believe it is 9 o'clock Pacific time. Is that right, Ellen?
That is right. I will be in Florida if I ever make it there.
Ah, great. Ellen Ratner of the Talk Radio News Service. Hey, Ellen, welcome to the program. Always wonderful to hear your voice here.
Well, thank you so much. I guess the main thing on everybody's plate are the debates. There's no question about that. I will be in Florida for it, and then I'll be talking. Actually, probably Adam will be talking tomorrow because I'll actually be on an airplane during the show. But Adam is going to be at the debates with me this evening. Of course, Mr. Bush managed to make everybody very happy. He called on Congress to approve of this $12 billion in relief funds for the hurricane victims. He visited a FEMA recovery center today. All that in preparation for warming up Florida for the debate.
Yeah.
Now, last night.
Go ahead.
I went to a Howard Dean benefit here. And, first of all, Howard yesterday taped a show for the Sunday morning talk shows on Tim Russert. And I didn't get to see it, but I hear he was very relaxed and did a great job.
Yeah.
But I will tell you, I was at this place where they had the benefit. I had been there in January before, a year ago, 6 months ago, 8 months ago, whenever it was, right before the Iowa primaries. There was as many people there last night. They were as excited as they normally were.
Yeah.
A year ago. I've never seen anything like it. It's like the Deniacs have not gone away.
I'm telling you, Ellen, what I think happened was the exact same thing that happened with Nixon in, I believe it was 72. I'd have to go back and look which year it was, but where Ed Muskie, when the Republican Party did their polling, it was really clear that Ed Muskie was going to easily beat Richard Nixon. So Richard Nixon dispatches Charlie Colson and his little buddies off to New Hampshire and says, bring this guy down. And the story that is told by some is that LSD or some similar substance got put in Ed Muskie's coffee. He gets up on the back of this flatbed truck and starts crying about his wife. You know, he just goes incoherent. And boom, Ed Muskie goes down in flames. George McGovern becomes the candidate. The Republicans knew in advance they could beat McGovern, they couldn't beat Muskie, and so they took out. So they got into the Democratic primary process. And when I saw that $1 million, which is a lot of money in one state, particularly the state of Iowa, which, you know, where local media is not that expensive, that $1 million was spent by the Club for Growth in ads specifically.
The Club for Growth ad, that sushi eating, latte
that's right,
drinking, blah, blah, blah. That ad did him in than anything else.
That's right, and it was they were going right after Howard Dean, and the reason why is because they did not want to run George Bush against Howard Dean because he would have lost. George Bush would have lost. Howard Dean would have mopped the floor with him.
I would agree with you 100%. In fact, I was just talking to a couple of the Deniacs about this last night, his campaign people, and the scream he could have gotten through. But that sushi eating, latte drinking, you know, whatever,
yeah,
gay marriage approving, I forgot how the whole ad went.
Yeah.
But that Club for Growth ad really destroyed him.
Yeah. Yeah. It was $1 million. I mean, you can change a lot of minds with $1 million.
Right. Also, John Kerry sent an email to his supporters, and this was just sent, and it said that he believes that Bush-Cheney thinks they can hide their failures, but they really can't, and he says that the truth is catching up. So he tried to whoop up the troop. He's also doing a concert tonight. I think it's with John Mellencamp.
Yes, it is.
Right after the event. I don't think we'll be able to move from one venue to the next that quickly, so I'm probably going to miss the concert.
Oh, bummer.
It
looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a good gig. In the meantime, George will probably be going around patting babies on the head and passing out more billions to Floridians.
The other thing that's happening tonight, and that is, or that's not tonight, is this afternoon there is a gay marriage vote amendment in the House. There are people, Republicans such as Christopher Cox, Shays of Connecticut, Republicans who are going to vote against it. But as you know, they are trying to get the Democrats on record voting on this before the election so that they can take it to their districts and make them try and make them miserable.
Yeah, yeah. Newt Gingrich got together with a bunch of Republicans, about 3 months ago, and he said, go for the wedge issues. And he gave them the ones that they had done the polling on, and that was one of them. And he said, these are the issues that will activate the base. These are the issues, and here are the issues that you can go for the middle.
Newt Gingrich with his gay sister.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, but he.
And I don't.
Nobody has ever accused Newt Gingrich of being a moral guy. I mean, he was my congressman when I lived in Georgia.
Oh, really? I didn't know you lived in Georgia.
Oh yeah, for 16 years we lived in Roswell and in Marietta, and I could tell you stories about Newt Gingrich that would curl your hair. Well, it's already kind of curly, as I recall, but maybe not.
That's definitely one of the top of the hit parade. The other thing, of course, is the Republicans and Democrats in the House are arguing about the 9/11 bill in the Senate. Senate.
Yeah.
That's happening. We're just waiting for the debates. But also, one other interesting thing, the Attorney General Ashcroft today said that the Justice Department is going to appeal the court ruling declaring the part of the Patriot Act unconstitutional, and you can bet it's going to probably wend its way all the way up to the Supreme Court.
Right, and that's the thing that we need to keep reminding people about, is that it's not going to make the Supreme Court before the election, certainly. It's going to be next year.
Not at all.
And next year, and certainly, if not next year, certainly the year after, we're going to have at least two, probably three, and maybe even four new Supreme Court justices, and they are going to be appointed by whomever gets elected president. And whether, regardless of what people may think of Kerry or Bush, on issues of the economy, the environment, education, health care, this is the issue that is going to, more than anything else, define the kind of world, the kind of America that our children and our grandchildren are going to be living in, the future generations are going to be living in.
For sure. And they're going to do whatever they can to take away the rights one at a time or wholesale if they can possibly get away with it.
Yeah. Yeah, we are watching the battle for the heart and soul of a democracy in the United States, and it ain't pretty. It ain't pretty.
I would agree 100%.
Ellen, anything else on your plate there?
Well, I think that the only sort of other interesting issues are that the Republicans are also trying to they've sent out a lot of data. A lot of their talking heads trying to say that, Kerry's a great debater. I'm sure you've talked about this before. They're trying to reduce expectations again, like they did in the first debate.
Yeah, if Bush doesn't drool, he wins.
Exactly. And the other thing, of course, is Fox News is saying that they will not necessarily abide by the debate rules in terms of where they put their cameras.
Right, and all the networks are essentially saying the same thing. We didn't sign no stinking agreement, and God bless them for that. I mean,
it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a small way of standing up. Now there's this Citizens Debate Commission, by the way, that has been created. You go to reclaimdemocracy.org. There's actually a group that has, I think, a good shot within the next 4 years of replacing this bipartisan, that is, this controlled by the Republicans and Democrats group that's sponsoring tonight's debate, with a nonpartisan group, the Citizens Debate Commission. So something to check out, something to put in your bio computer, Ellen.
The League of Women Voters just said we're out of here.
I know,
because of what they wanted to do.
I know. Well, this is a broad coalition of groups that range from extreme conservatives to extreme liberals. So however you define those.
Well, there was a part of the debate commission that actually had to deal with it was the primary debate, and they asked. I was their sort of talk radio input, and the guy who runs Campaign Elections magazine, or had started it, Ron Fischow, asked me for my viewpoints. I sent it back to him, wrote a whole thing, read their whole whatever. But, of course, nobody paid any attention to that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, well, you could put in all your input, but...
Yeah.
Things kind of change, my friend.
They do. They do. And it's got to start with getting money out of getting corporate money out of politics, in my opinion.
$11 million for the debate.
Yeah. Yeah.
From the corporation.
Surprise, surprise. You know, yeah. Okay.
Well, I will talk to you tomorrow. Well, actually, it'll probably be Adam tomorrow from Florida from the debate.
Okay, great. Ellen, thanks so much for calling with the report. Great to hear from you. Ellen Ratner, the Talk Radio News Service. Thanks, Ellen. 17 minutes before the hour. Three bombs. This just handed to me. Story of Dateline Baghdad, Associated Press. Just before the debate tonight, you're going to hear George Bush say, everything's fine, everything's under control, democracy's on the march in Iraq. Here's the story. I'll just read it straight. The old rip and read, as we used to call when I used to do radio news back in the 70s. Three bombs exploded at a neighborhood celebration Thursday in western Baghdad, killing 35 children and 7 adults, officials said. Hours earlier, a suicide car bomb killed a U.S. soldier and 2 Iraqis on the capital's outskirts. The bombs in Baghdad's El Amel neighborhood caused the largest death toll of children in any insurgent attack since the conflict in Iraq began 17 months ago. The children, who were still on school vacation, said they had been drawn to the scene by American soldiers handing out candy. The blasts, at least 2 of which were car bombs, went off in swift succession about 1 p.m., killing 42 people and wounding 141 others, including 10 U.S. soldiers. The bombs targeted a ceremony in which residents were celebrating the opening of a new sewage system, and a U.S. convoy was passing by at the same time, according to an Interior Ministry spokesman. Quote, quoting 12-year-old Abdel Rahman Dawood, lying naked in a hospital bed with shrapnel embedded all over his body. He says, quote, the Americans called us. They told us, come here, asking us if we wanted sweets. We went beside them. Then a car exploded. This is not an indictment of the American soldiers. I'm sure that the American soldiers were trying to make friends with the kids. Our soldiers are us. They're not bad people, but the situation that they have been put in, the situation that has been created by this bizarre right wing extremist cabal of neocons that have seized control of the White House and control in large part of the Republican Party, you know, lying us into a war for which they had no plan to win and no plan to exit. To control the most oil-rich nation in the world.
I thought Saudi Arabia was the most oil-rich.
No, actually, it's looking increasingly like there's more oil in Iraq, and that they've known this for at least a decade, than there is in Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia's oil fields are getting kind of old, and Iraq's are very virgin. This is major. This is major, major stuff. As you know, 10% of the world's oil. I mean, when you think about it, 10% of the world's oil. That's
Iraq sits on top of 10% of the world's oil reserves. Very significant reserve, second only to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, and worth dropping a few bombs to get, apparently. Okay, here's some of the things that George Bush is going to say. Number one, he's going to say, there are a handful of people who are willing to kill in order to stop the process in Iraq. These are all things that these are regular parts of his stump speech, so odds are he'll toss them out tonight. Here's the facts. He's going to say it's just a handful of people. The facts. The number of Iraqi insurgents has quadrupled over the past year. Insurgent attacks on U.S. forces are up 20% since the spring, up 100% since last winter. Last month, attacks on U.S. troops averaged 90 a day, 5 times as many as last winter. Fact, one by one, Iraqi cities are becoming no-go zones controlled entirely by Bush's so-called handful of insurgents. Some 20 cities now that we can't go into. Fact, over the past 30 days, more than 2,300 attacks by insurgents have been directed against civilians and military targets in Iraq, in a pattern that sprawls over nearly every major population center with the exception of the Kurdish North. Okay, another thing that George Bush is going to say. He's going to say, we've already spent more than $1 billion on urgent reconstruction projects in areas threatened by the insurgency. Fact, Congress had allocated $18 billion for desperately needed reconstruction in Iraq. Ongoing instability coupled with inexperienced management means only $1 billion, 5% has been spent. Senator Richard Lugar, Republican of Indiana, blamed this on, quote, the incompetence in the Bush administration, end quote. I inserted the word Bush. He said the incompetence in the administration. There's only one in power. We'll say it's the Bush administration. Fact. Iraq's largest source of electricity, the Baiji power plant, produces less than half the electricity it generated 2 years ago. The Bush administration vastly underestimated the time, money, and effort needed to restore the country's power grid. Fact. Less than 30% of reconstruction money in Iraq has reached Iraqis. The rest is going to security, U.S. government overhead, contractor profits, insurance, foreign workers' salaries, corruption, and mismanagement. Fact. The deterioration of sewer and water and sewage systems in the past year has led to the spread of a virulent form of hepatitis. In 2003, there were 70% more cases of hepatitis of all types reported across Iraq than in the year before. The collapsed water system has also led to outbreaks of typhoid fever. Another claim he's going to make, nearly 100,000 fully trained and equipped Iraqi soldiers, police officers, and other security personnel are working today. Fact, only 8,169 have received full training. I guess we can leave it at that. That's as a beginning. Several pages of these in the American Progress Action Fund. Get ready, folks. It's going to be flying thick tonight, 10 minutes before the hour.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote. Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a direct TV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a 4-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can...
Health and workers could go on strike when the contract expires at midnight on September 30th. Rebecca Miles reports.
Thousands of building service workers from across the tri-state area voted overwhelmingly to authorize Local 32BJ, the bargaining committee, to call a strike if talks with management fail to produce an acceptable contract this week. The turnout was so large that loudspeakers were erected on the sidewalk to allow workers to hear the negotiations. And the sticking point with management is affordable health care. I spoke to Leo Reynolds, a building services worker, who told me why he was at the meeting today.
They want to give us a wage increase, but it's not enough, especially if you have a big family.
Matt Nersig, spokesman for Local 32BJ, explains what has happened since the last contract negotiation.
What we're asking for is management to extend our employer-paid health care coverage.
So far, the union has not seen a contract proposal they think is acceptable. But as Nersig points out, unlike in other organizations where employees are now contributing towards their health care, the salaries of many cleaners and janitors are so modest that to make contributions to their own health care would be impossible. I asked Matt Nersig whether he thought it might come to a strike and what effect that might have on the city.
With 25,000 commercial building workers here in the city, there could be a serious and inconvenient disruption of business and the flow of commerce if management pushed us into a situation where we felt like we would have to take some kind of action to get our message across to them.
With more than 70,000 members, Local 32BJ is the largest building service workers union in the United States. For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Rebecca Miles reporting.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Got to go back. We've got to go back.
And we got to go back to democracy here in the United States.
Got to go back.
Wouldn't it be nice to go back to the days back, say, the time of Jack Kennedy or the time of Franklin Roosevelt, when there was actually an open discussion about the role of corporate money in American politics, the time of Teddy Roosevelt, the time of Grover Cleveland talking about, you know, the power of corporations is enhanced while Americans are being trampled behind the iron heel of corporate power in his annual address to Congress in 1888. Yeah. Well, tonight you're going to hear George Bush say, for example, because of the war in Iraq, Americans in the world are safer. Here's the fact. America's, or a series of them, America is less safe because of the war in Iraq. For a fraction of the $150 billion we spent in Iraq, we could have secured our ports, our railroads, and our airports from terrorist attack. Not to mention, you know, beefing up first responders, putting hundreds of thousands of cops on the streets, improving education. I mean, you want to make America safer? Raise the middle class. Eliminate poverty. Think of the billions that we have spent. Fact, UN Secretary General Kofi Annan publicly disagreed with Bush in July, saying, quote, "No, I cannot say the world is safer today than it was 2 or 3 years ago." Fact, the world is less safe because of the war in Iraq. The occupation of Iraq has helped al-Qaeda recruit more members and turned Iraq into a dynamic new battleground for al-Qaeda. This, I'm quoting here, from a report by the British House of Commons, July 21st, 2004. The war has galvanized terrorists against America and the West. The LA Times reports Iraq has emerged as, quote, a rallying point for a seemingly endless supply of young extremists willing to die in a jihad or holy war. Fact, among national security professionals, this is from Atlantic Monthly, October issue, among national security professionals, one view prevails. The war in Iraq has increased the threats America faces and has reduced the military, financial, and diplomatic tools with which we can respond. Bush is going to say, in order to have credibility with those people who are fighting for freedom, the leaders of this country must not send mixed signals. Fact. Bush sent mixed signals through his ambivalent approach to Fallujah. Marine Commander Lieutenant James T. Conway said, when you order elements of a Marine division to attack a city, you really need to. You can't vacillate in the middle of something like that. Once you commit, you have to stay committed. Bush has been, well, you can go in. No, don't go in. Go in. Same thing with Sodder. Oh, let's take him out. Well, let's not take him out. Well, let's take him out. George trying to micromanage a war when he has no experience in war because he was too busy drinking during Vietnam. It's the Tom Hartman Program. You're listening to the radio support group of, by, and for we the people here in the United States.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
These have been tough times for most Americans. The economy has been in the toilet, and there's all this scary terrorism going on. But ordinary people have risen to the challenge and tightened their belts and paid more of the tax burden, while unions get busted and jobs outsourced and benefits cut. All so we billionaires could enjoy more wealth than ever before. Now, you're not going to hear it from Bill Gates or Kenneth Lay, but I want to take a moment to thank you all for your generosity and grace, for everything you've done just for us. And now I'm off to squander my obscenely large tax refund on another vacation home and my third yacht. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaire!
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Over 1,000 workers are on strike at 4 downtown San Francisco hotels. Represented by Unite Here, Local 2, the hospitality employees vow to stay out for 2 weeks. John Wilhelm, president of the hospitality division, says workers are striking to protect their health and pension benefits, reduce workloads, and for higher pay.
Most important issues being fought about in these cities is the rapid increase in health care costs. In San Francisco, the employers have proposed that by the end of a proposed 5-year contract, San Francisco hotel workers who pay virtually nothing for their health care now would pay $273 per person per month out of pocket, which is totally unaffordable in the wage brackets that exist in our industry. If we're going to have effective bargaining in each of the hotel markets, we've got to figure out how to have a national dialogue on the issues that are the most important.
Despite fierce management resistance, Unite Here wants a 2-year deal to line up contract negotiations with the bulk of the other major union hotels in the U.S., including New York, Chicago, Toronto, Honolulu, and Boston.
A minimum wage referendum placed on the ballot in Florida could change the outcome of the November 2nd presidential election. The measure asks voters to support an increase in the state minimum wage from $5.15 to $6.15 an hour this year, with annual increases connected to inflation. The initiative could bring out voters who normally would not vote because they are turned off by the candidates. Elise Gowdy Wright, director of South Florida Jobs with Justice, organized a coalition of civil rights groups, religious congregations, and labor unions to collect nearly 1 million signatures over a 10-month period.
I think for a lot of folks that are behind this effort, the hope is that because this is such a popular issue and there's so many people who are supportive of it, that it will help with voter turnout.
Gowdy Wright believes increasing the minimum wage will have a positive ripple effect for many Florida workers.
Those folks who make minimum wage will be directly impacted, but those folks who might make slightly higher than minimum wage, many of those employers will feel inclined to raise their wages as well.
The restaurant industry and the Florida Chamber of Commerce are opposing the ballot initiative. George W. Bush opposes raising the national minimum wage from its 1997 level, while John Kerry has expressed support for an increase. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Black men with the same skills as white men are only half as likely to attain management positions. That's according to a new study by Brush College's School of Public Affairs. Black women, the study says, are only a third as likely to obtain those same management positions. The study finds that the glass ceiling phenomenon, usually associated primarily with women trying to obtain equality in the workplace, has now begun to apply to minorities.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Mr. and Mrs. Green, let's talk about ways to grow your wealth.
Where can we get the highest return with the lowest risk?
These days, elections.
We don't usually get involved in politics.
Well, consider this. Over the past 4 years, the pharmaceutical sector turned $44 million in contributions into Medicare legislation worth $139 billion in profits.
Not
excellent.
Bad.
Who shall we make the check out to?
Want to protect your outrageous wealth? Invest in the right candidate.
Easily paid for by billionaires for Bush.
I bring you tidings of great joy. At last, our Congress critters have done something tangible to lift people up from the economic doldrums. They've raised wages in America. You're not silly enough to think for a moment that Congress would raise your wages, are you? No, no, Nanette. For the past several years, they've kept the minimum wage in our country stuck at the paltry poverty level of $5.15 an hour. It's their wages that they've just raised. Again. By again, I refer to the fact that this is the sixth pay hike that our lawmakers have bestowed upon themselves in the past 6 years. This time, the members will pocket an extra $4,000 each, raising their gross pay to about $162,000 a year. Of course, congressional leaders don't do such dirty work directly. Instead, these steady increases, now totaling some $25,000 over the 6 years, have come surreptitiously. Each year, an automatic congressional increase is tucked deep inside the mammoth appropriation bill for the Treasury Department, a bill that always passes. So members always get a raise, unless they choose to deny themselves by specifically voting to remove the automatic hike. Thus far, they've shown remarkable restraint in this regard. One bold member who keeps trying to say no to this help-yourself dip into the taxpayer's gravy is Jim Matheson, Democrat of Utah. Again this year, Matheson called for a vote on the $4,000 increase. But by a tally of 235 to 170, his colleagues rejected his procedural motion, thus avoiding even having to cast a direct public vote on their money grab. This is Jim Hightower saying, at a time when the wages of average Americans have fallen in terms of buying power, it's good to know whose side your Congress critter is on. To learn how your member of Congress voted on Matheson's attempt at honesty, call Taxpayers for Common Sense, 1-800-TAXPAYER.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
But who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's. Know who's really gelling? The King of Queens. Monday through Friday. Check your local listings.
Your oldest has just turned driving age. Time to add him to your policy. So you get in your car, drive down to your insurance company. Hunt for a space, double park, get a parking ticket, get in a fight with a meter maid, get thrown in jail, meet a guy named Wally. Wait a minute. This is just a bad dream. You've got Geico. You don't have to drive anywhere. You can do all that car insurance stuff online. Oh, that was a close one.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. Online at geico.com.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. It's Thursday afternoon. It's the time that we get into, let's get out of politics for just a few minutes here and current events, as it were, although this is still current events, and get into those things that you didn't know that you didn't know, that you didn't know you needed to know. Maybe what you did know wasn't right. In fact, maybe everything you know is wrong. It could be. Whoa, what happened here?
I'll just think. You're out of your mind.
There you
go. Everything you know is wrong.
Anyhow, Ann Peterman is the co-director of the Global Justice Ecology Project and is the steering committee chair for the Stop GE Trees campaign, which includes the Sierra Club, Rainforest Action Network, Polaris Institute, Forest Ethics, Forest Steward Guild, and others. Ann Peterman, welcome to the program today.
Hi, how are you doing today?
I am great. I am wondering if you are familiar with Klebsiella planticola.
Klebsiella planticola?
Yeah. Can't say that.
Okay, I want to get back to that. First of all, tell us about what is happening in China.
Well, lots of things are happening in China, but I think you specifically want to know about the genetically engineered trees in China.
There you go, yeah.
Okay, yes. Well, it's recently been revealed that China has planted about 1.4 million genetically engineered trees throughout northern China in vast plantations that they don't even know. Nobody in China really even knows where they are, but they're out there. So this is a big problem that we've recently found out about and are working on.
Okay, and people say, well, you know, there's insects that eat these trees, and the genetic modification was to cause the trees to produce their own insecticide so that they would kill the insects. What's wrong with that?
Well, to start with, the reason why they first started with monoculture tree plantations that were not genetically engineered, and those were heavily impacted by insects.
Let's define monoculture for a lot of our listeners.
As a lot of monoculture plantations are, I was just getting to that, which means that monoculture means that it's one species of tree. You have a huge plantation, it only contains one species of tree. As we all know, when we go into a regular forest, a real forest, you know, there's lots of different species of trees, there's lots of understory plants, there's wildlife, there's birds, you know, there's all of these things in there, you know, they live in harmony with each other, which is why the forest is able to survive and be healthy. Yeah. When you eliminate that forest and you replace it with a monoculture plantation, a plantation of a single species, it's completely out of balance. So you end up with insects come in and they go, ooh, you know, free lunch. Look at all these trees that we love to eat, so let's eat them all, because there's nobody here to, you know, stop us. There's no birds here. There's no wildlife that eat these insects. There's the beneficial insects that eat those insects are largely absent. So you end up with, you know, this giant insect smorgasbord called the monoculture plantation. So
right.
China said, well, that didn't work out for us too well, so let's put some insect-resistant genetically engineered trees in these plantations, and that'll solve the problem. The problem with that is now you have these trees that they basically, every cell of the tree has this bacterial toxin in it called BT. And so any insect, whether it's beneficial or not, that tries to eat that tree is going to be killed.
Yeah, BT is for Bacillus thermophilus, isn't it? Isn't this the same stuff as in corn?
Yeah, Bacillus thuringiensis.
Thank you.
But the problem is that in agricultural crops where they've used this insect-resistant gene, what they've found is that not all of the pest insects are killed, that some of them live, and in fact, in as few as three generations of these insects, you start having insecticide-resistant insects. And so
right.
Now you have all of these trees with BT and all of these pests that are now resistant to BT. And so in agricultural crops, you see that they now are using all kinds of more toxic pesticides to eliminate these pests.
Right. And
it only postpones the problem.
Right. And an even larger problem is that, as I recall, BT is a toxin derived from a particular type of bacteria that naturally occurs, and that many plants actually normally endogenously produce within them, you know, as their own insecticide that we've borrowed. That's how we, you know, glommed onto the gene for this thing in the first place. And that as we spread this in our corn and now trees and things like that, we are producing insects that normal plants that might use this particular toxin and variations on it can't resist. Plus, there's questions about the toxicity of BT on humans. Am I
right? There's
off
the
base
problem
any
with
of
BT on humans, and also BT going into the soil. BT is
right.
exuded through the roots. In addition to, you know, being in the rest of the tree, it goes through the roots into the soil and is very harmful to the soil microorganisms that, you know, cause soil to be useful to other plants. So, in addition to all of the problems with the insects, you know, now you're destroying the soil. And as you mentioned, because the BT is present in every cell of the tree, it's also present in the grains of pollen that come out of the tree. And there have been studies now finding that agricultural workers who work near and with corn crops that have been modified to contain this BT toxin are experiencing all kinds of respiratory problems, immunological problems, and so on as a direct result of this BT pollen.
Right.
So when we talk about trees, we're talking about plants that can distribute pollen in large amounts for hundreds of miles. So you can imagine the potential impacts on any nearby human communities are potentially very, very, very severe.
Yeah, we're speaking with Ann Peterman, the co-director of the Global Justice Ecology Project. Ann, is there a website, by the way?
There is. It's www.globaljusticeecology.org.
Okay, very
easy to
remember.
And we have lots more information on this issue on that website.
Okay, and now in Italy, there's this project to plant trees to sequester carbon, which, first of all, in my mind, seems silly because the trees eventually, I mean, the lifespan of a tree a few hundred years, and then the carbon gets released again. Nonetheless, it's a temporary stopgap. The solution, of course, is to stop producing the carbon in the first place. But nonetheless, they're trying to sequester carbon with trees, and in accordance with provisions of the Kyoto Protocol. And the United States, who is not a signatory to the Kyoto Protocol, and by the way, Russia today announced that they're going, they just passed this legislation that they're going to participate, which is going to tip it over the 55% threshold of carbon producers and make the protocol law, but that's a whole other discussion. And so now Italy is going to be planting trees, and so the U.S. or U.S. companies or pressure from the United States, agencies in the government, the companies are going in and saying, well, why don't you plant genetically modified trees?
Well, what happened was in Italy last December, the U.N. Framework Convention on Climate Change was meeting, and they're the body that oversees the Kyoto Protocol. And the United States, as you mentioned, they're not a party to the Kyoto Protocol, but they can still sit on these UN Framework Convention on Climate Change meetings. And through their pressure, they got the UN framework to agree that GE trees could be used in carbon offset forestry plantations under Kyoto Protocol. When I say carbon offset forestry plantations, what I mean is plantations that are grown specifically by northern industries. Usually located in southern countries to offset the carbon produced by industries in the north.
Yeah.
It's the whole idea of carbon offset forestry is based in basically junk science.
Yeah.
But the addition into this mix of genetically engineered trees is going to cause a whole bunch of problems that will, in fact, make global warming worse.
Yeah,
And I can go into some of those details, but basically it's just a really bad idea.
Yeah, this is a mess. Which brings us to Klebsiella planticola. You probably know about this, and this is a story that was a decade ago. I wrote about it in a book I wrote some years ago, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. And Dr. Lane Ingham of Oregon State University looked into this. There was a European company, as I recall, it was 92. That was trying to come up with a way. There was a big problem in Western states, and particularly in Hawaii. People have seen this, where they burn the sugarcane crops afterwards, or out in the West they'll burn the remnants of the wheat crops and various different crops, and it produces clouds of pollution, of smoke, right? which are a problem. And they thought, if we could create a bacteria that would digest cellulose and convert it into alcohol, it would be wonderful because we could take all this waste carbon that is being burned right now, and the carbon's being thrown into the atmosphere. We could convert it into ethanol, which could be used as a fuel, and it would be an organic process. It would be self-generative. The bacteria would continue living, sort of like yogurt and yogurt culture. And so they took this normal soil bacteria, a ubiquitous soil bacteria, Klebsiella planticola, and they modified it. They genetically modified it. Normally, this bacteria simply attaches itself to the roots of every plant on Earth has or can carry Klebsiella planticola, and it's part of the normal symbiotic process there, but it doesn't produce ethanol, and they genetically modified this stuff to produce ethanol. And we're preparing to spray it on an outdoor test crop. And Elaine Ingham said, let's check this stuff out. She tested wheat with this stuff and discovered that all the wheat plants that had this particular Klebsiella in the soil, this genetically modified version, died. And they were dying. When she checked it out, they were dying from ethanol poisoning. They were being killed by the production of the alcohol by the Klebsiella in their own roots. Mm. And she publicized this 2 weeks before they were going to spray this in, you know, outdoors. And this bug, this one bug, Klebsiella planicola, had it gotten loose, this genetically modified version, could have meant the end of all plant life on Earth. I realize this sounds like, you know, over the top, but this is, go check it out, soilfoodweb.com. Lane Ingham wrote this up at Oregon State University, and there have been several books that have been written about this. This is like, we're playing with fire here, aren't we, Ellen? I mean, Ann?
Yes, oh, absolutely. I mean, and genetically engineered trees is a similar projection, you know, that they don't have, especially, you know, in China, they've got these insect-resistant trees. There's no controls to make sure that these trees don't contaminate native forests. You know, pollen, as I mentioned earlier, spreads for hundreds of miles. So now you've got this insect-resistant gene being unleashed on native forests, which will now start producing trees that kill insects, you know, randomly. And then those trees are going to continue to pollute other native forests. You know, you see what I'm saying? It's like a domino effect that you have no way of stopping.
Yeah,
and insect resistance is only one of the traits that people are engineering trees for. They're engineering them to be resistant to herbicides, so you can put as much, you know, toxic chemical on them as you want, and they'll still grow.
To grow faster, which is going to screw up the normal homeostasis of the systems. And we're just about out of time here. We've got about 30 seconds left. What can people do about this?
Well, there's a campaign now to get the UN, the United Nations, who made this decision about allowing GE trees to be used in plantations for carbon sequestering, to get them to say no, that GE trees must be banned. There must be a global ban on GE trees because...
And where? And in 5 seconds, where can people go to get information?
They can go to our website, www.globaljusticeecology.org. We'll plug you in. We'll get you set up.
Great. Globaljusticeecology.org. Ann Peterman, thanks so much for being on our program today.
Thank you.
Have a great afternoon. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Len. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. Add $4.99 a month per second in each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
The machines don't leave no paper trail. The billionaires don't want you to vote this year. We'll send you a message that's loud and clear that the votes can't be counted in your community. Why even register? Don't waste your energy. Don't go to the polls on election day because we bought the election and it better go our way.
The billionaires for Bush, they don't want you to vote.
The billionaires don't want you to vote.
Don't vote.
If you're happy with George Bush in charge, if you want to keep us living large, do you really want to rock the boat? Hey, the billionaires don't want you to vote.
No, the billionaires definitely don't want you to vote. Welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Two Italian hostages have been freed. This is the sort of old news. It happened a few days ago, but I wanted to talk about this for a few minutes. So they call them the two Simonas, Simona Potti and Simona Toretta. Both 29, they were with the Italian Red Cross in Baghdad, and they were released, a couple days ago. And I'm seeing something happening here in Iraq that I've seen before. I've worked for over 25 years with an international relief agency based in West Germany called Kinder und Jugendhilfswerk Salem. And in the United States, it's the Salem Children's Trust. And have done international relief work for this organization, gone into Africa, into Uganda during the war against Idi Amin there in 1980, and back again in 1981, helped set up a hospital there, which is now a thriving program. We started a program in Bogota, Colombia. I participated in that. We got a program started in Lima, Peru, and then it didn't survive. I participated in the creation of several of these things around the world. And I'm not saying this to brag about it. I'm saying this to say I've been there. And I remember the first time that I was in Bogota, and this must have been about 15 years ago, and more or less. And we were visiting, there were some local people who wanted to help out with the program. That we were creating a program down in the La Paz slum, and basically a school. And there was this fairly wealthy family that was supporting our efforts, and they had invited us to us being myself and Horst von Heyer, this German fellow who was a friend of mine and fellow cohort in this effort. They had invited us to their home for dinner, and when we showed up. And there was another person who was living there who was a German whose husband, her husband, worked for as an engineer in the community in Bogota. And when we showed up, it was like this absolutely frantic thing about, you know, getting quick, got to lock the doors. And, you know, when the other person showed up, this other woman showed up, everybody was just scared to death. And I couldn't figure out what they were all so afraid of. And, you know, other than the fact that it was like a high crime city or something. And over dinner, the story came out that this other woman who came to join us for dinner, I don't recall if it was her best friend or if it was her husband's secretary. It was some close relation. I actually wrote about this in a book called The Prophet's Way, and I haven't read my own book in enough years to refresh my memory, but because I kept a diary of it at the time, you know, when it happened. But this other woman, not the one who had shown up, but her friend that she knew, had been kidnapped a few weeks earlier and repeatedly raped. And this had been tape recorded, and they would call up her husband and play for him the recordings of her screaming. And the whole point of it was just to get money. And in fact, it turned out that kidnapping for profit has become a major industry in Bogota. Still is to this day. It still is in Mexico City. It still is in all of the major cities of South America. Kidnap with a, not so much in Argentina, but in particularly in Colombia and in Mexico, kidnapping for profit is just a major business. It's run by the local equivalent of organized crime. They have their turfs. If another group decides to start kidnapping in Group A's turf, they have wars. They kill each other off. And that's what I think we're seeing right now emerging in Iraq. And it's a major, and the local Iraqis are victims of it. And they're having to pay, you know, $1,000 ransom to get their families back. NPR has been doing a good job of reporting on this. And now they've taken these two Italians, and apparently Italy paid $1 million to get them back, which means that the stakes have been raised, and this business is going to be very profitable. And the mess is going to get wildly, wildly worse. Mark my words. George Bush has led us into a disaster.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. Debbie Thompson from Nevada writes, "No one in our area thought the fires in California would affect us 300 miles away, but they did. Your fantastic air purifiers kept our home clear of the dust and smoke. They were a real lifesaver." Folks, just how effective is an Oreck professional air purifier? Well, call us at 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200. Try one free for 90 days.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Over 1,000 workers are on strike at 4 downtown San Francisco hotels. Represented by Unite Here, Local 2, the hospitality employees vow to stay out for 2 weeks. John Wilhelm, president of the hospitality division, says workers are striking to protect their health and pension benefits, reduce workloads, and for higher pay.
Most important issues being fought about in these cities is the rapid increase in health care costs. In San Francisco, the employers have proposed that by the end of a proposed 5-year contract, San Francisco hotel workers who pay virtually nothing for their health care now would pay $273 per person per month out of pocket, which is totally unaffordable in the wage brackets that exist in our industry. If we're going to have effective bargaining in each of the hotel markets, we've got to figure out how to have a national dialogue on the issues that are the most important.
Despite fierce management resistance, Unite Here wants a 2-year deal to line up contract negotiations with the bulk of the other major union hotels in the U.S., including New York, Chicago, Toronto, Honolulu, and Boston.
A minimum wage referendum placed on the ballot in Florida could change the outcome of the November 2nd presidential election. The measure asks voters to support an increase in the state minimum wage from $5.15 to $6.15 an hour this year, with annual increases connected to inflation. The initiative could bring out voters who normally would not vote because they are turned off by the candidates. Elise Gowdy Wright, director of South Florida Jobs with Justice, organized a coalition of civil rights groups, religious congregations, and labor unions to collect nearly 1 million signatures over a 10-month period.
I think for a lot of folks that are behind this effort, the hope is that because this is such a popular issue and there's so many people who are supportive of it, that it will help with voter turnout.
Gowdy Wright believes increasing the minimum wage will have a positive ripple effect for many Florida workers.
Those folks who make minimum wage will be directly impacted, but those folks who might make slightly higher than minimum wage, many of those employers will feel inclined to raise their wages as well.
The restaurant industry and the Florida Chamber of Commerce are opposing the ballot initiative. George W. Bush opposes raising the national minimum wage from its 1997 level, while John Kerry has expressed support for an increase. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Black men with the same skills as white men are only half as likely to attain management positions. That's according to a new study by Baruch College's School of Public Affairs. Black women, the study says, are only a third as likely to obtain those same management positions. The study finds that the glass ceiling phenomenon, usually associated primarily with women trying to obtain equality in the workplace, has now begun to apply to minorities.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
We're just living our American dream. The CEOs are playing for the Bush-Cheney team. My president, he got you all scared. The billionaires are coming, so you better beware.
Look out. 1-800-1866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back to our program, 27 minutes before the hour. Every now and then, you know, just a news story slides by, and it's like, you know, boing, makes my eyeballs pop out. This a Reuters story. Just, you know, innocent little story in the newspaper. And let me just read you the first sentence. 30% of former U.S. soldiers who have been called back to duty involuntarily to serve in Iraq and Afghanistan have failed to report on time. Say what? 30%. Of former U.S. soldiers who have been called back to duty involuntarily to serve in Iraq and Afghanistan have failed to report on time. Now, it's not like they're just, like, not showing up. I mean, they're fighting it. About 85% of those who did not show up on time have formally requested duty exemptions because of health issues or some other hardship. But most of these requests are likely to be rejected, according to Julia Collins, a spokeswoman for the Army Human Resources Command. Most of the others have requested a delay in their reporting date. She says, I expect a small percent to be approved for exemption. Cases are so varied. You got medical, you got financial hardship, you've got sole caretaker for children and parents, blah, blah, blah. But 30% of U.S. soldiers being called up involuntarily are recalled up, called back to go to Iraq or Afghanistan, are not showing up. And at the same time, nobody wants to talk about a draft. You've got the cons saying, oh, you know, the Democrats are trying to scare you with all this talk about a draft. And you got Democrats saying, you know, the National Guard was created to guard the nation, not to be the Army. You've got hurricanes in Florida. The National Guard is supposed to help out. Back when we had riots in Detroit, the National Guard was supposed to help out. I mean, the National Guard is our domestic militia is the wrong word. It's sort of our domestic defense. I mean, traditionally, what's happened, I mean, the purpose of the National Guard, of course, is to be here in the event that the country is attacked. It hasn't happened since 1812, but, you know, there they are. And so the role that they have traditionally played, and in fact, that's, you know, to be here in case the country's attacked, that's why when George W. Bush joined the Texas Air National Guard, he knew he wouldn't go to Vietnam because they were defending Texas in case Mexico decided to join with Vietnam and declare war on us or something. And, you know, seriously. And not seriously that Mexico would, but I mean that's what the National Guard is all about, is about guarding the nation. And here we now are dragging the National Guard's men and women into combat situations that are really Army situations. They don't have access to the same kind of health care, the same kind of pay, they don't even have the same equipment. They don't even have the same quality of equipment as the regular Army and the Marine Corps. And number one, it's just wrong. I mean, I know people in the Guard. I have a good friend who's in the Guard who's been called up for a year now. I can tell you, you know, this is putting people's jobs at risk. It's stressing their families out. It's harming them financially, and it's simply not what the Guard was intended for. So why not crank up the draft. I mean, it just makes sense, right? Except it doesn't make political sense. So the Republicans are refusing to talk about it. Most of them. Although Chuck Hagel, who, mark my words, the former president of the voting machine company, who then got elected on his own voting machines in Nebraska, and who in all probability in 2008 will be the Republican candidate for president. Trust me. I've been watching this guy. He's trying to position himself as the moderate Republican, which at the moment is an oxymoron, but, you know, there really were moderate Republicans at one point in time. And in any case, Chuck Hagel has come out and said a draft might become necessary. That's a quote, those three words. And it hasn't made him a lot of friends among the Republicans. But guard recruitment is down 12%. You've got reservists who are 40 years old being mobilized. The Army badly overstretched. I mean, Bill Clinton was criticized for the war in Kosovo, and perhaps correctly so, that there was not a congressional declaration of war. You know, I'll go along with that. I absolutely am in agreement with those strict constructionists, as it were, many of them conservatives, many of them liberals. This is something that I think transcends political labels, who suggest that when the Constitution says only Congress has the power to make war, that's what the Constitution meant, that's what the founders meant, and that's really the way it should be. I mean, some of the things that they said and meant turned out to be a little screwy, but the vast majority of them were really, really solid. And this is one of them, that the only body of our government that should have the power to make war is the body that every few months has to go back home and face the voters. They face them in the ballot box every 2 years, but, you know, regularly go back to their district, get feedback that is most accessible, that being the House of Representatives, that only Congress should have the power to make war, to declare war. But in any case, Bill Clinton had his war in Kosovo, and, you know, now there are peacekeepers there. I mean, you know, you just don't have instant wars and then, you know, over and done with. You know how many American soldiers are among those peacekeepers? None. Clinton was successful in getting foreign troops in to take responsibility for the follow-through. Well, it's pretty clear, as George Herbert Walker Bush used to say about taxes, that ain't going to happen under this guy, under George W. Bush. And so, I think the draft is an issue. It'll be really interesting to see if it gets raised tonight. I'll bet you just about anything it won't. Or if it is, I don't think either one of these guys wants to touch this thing. It's political dynamite. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Armin in Sarasota, Florida on the line. Hey, Armin, what's up?
Let me go over these points real quick, please. If I was John Kerry, which I'm not, and I had the opportunity to face this weasel, this is what I would say to him quickly.
Okay.
Mr. Bush, since you've been in office, 48 states have lost manufacturing jobs. 45 million people have lost their health insurance. Prescription drug costs have soared up to 45%. You were amply warned, but 9/11 happened under your watch. You started two wars. You set a new record for government debt. The federal trade deficit had never been higher. You received the largest campaign contributions ever from corporations. You say God talks to you and you follow Christ's teachings. Mr. President, is your medication right or do you need a new evaluation?
A good one, Armin. Excellent. Although you're reading again. it's good talking points. The problem is that, what's his name, the lawyer who's defending the Saudi Arabia against the 9/11 victims, the guy who was in charge of leading the effort against the recount in Florida in 2000. James Baker III, the multimillionaire lawyer. He succeeded in getting a proviso agreement into the terms of the debate that The debaters will not be allowed to address each other. So, Armin, marvelous dream. Dream on. Dream on, unfortunately. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Petra in, is it Jemez Springs, New Mexico?
Yes, Tom, from Jemez Springs, New Mexico.
Welcome.
Thank you. I was actually just one talking about a draft. I got an email the other day that there is a H.R. 163 bill that's being pushed by legislation that would institute a mandatory draft for all boys and girls ages 18 to 26.
Yes. Yeah, there's one in the House and there's one in the Senate. They've been introduced by Democrats, and the Republicans correctly point out that these bills are not going to pass. There's no way they're going to pass. They're not even going to get out of committee. And that they're being introduced by Democrats to cause people to be alarmed about the possibility that the Republicans are going to start a draft. That's all true. The reality, in addition to that, though, is that if George Bush is elected in 2004 and the situation in Afghanistan and in Iraq can both continue to deteriorate, and they're both very, very bad right now, And particularly if he decides that he's going to go after some other country as well, we're going to have a draft. So,
but, well, okay, great. Thanks for
go ahead. So I'm assuming that your question was, you know, is this legislation here? Is it going to pass? Or you wanted to point that out?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If it's going to pass and if people do know about it, because I didn't know about it and I just found out. So.
Yeah. It's there. You're absolutely right. Those particular bills, though, I don't think that there's any. One of the problems with those bills, Petra, is that they provide for no exemptions. There's no exemptions basically for wealthy people. In other words, there's no student exemptions, things like, you know, which is how Dick Cheney got himself out of the draft four times. Things like that. So when the draft bill does get passed, it will be written by the Republicans, and there will be escape hatches in there for the kids of wealth, guaranteed.
Right.
Guaranteed. I mean, it's a tragedy, and I know I sound cynical, but I've seen this movie before. You know, I was alive and conscious in the 60s and 70s. I remember it well. Petra, thank you for the call.
Thank
I appreciate
you,
it. Great to hear from you. It's always marvelous to hear from our listeners. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Mentioning stories sliding by, CIA officials, this from Editor and Publisher, which is bills itself as America's oldest journal covering the newspaper industry. CIA officials are now leaking to reporters left and right, signaling a new dynamic in press coverage of the war. The fellow that John Stewart of The Daily Show loves to refer to as scumbag for liberty, Robert Novak, I simply consider him, partisan traitor Robert Novak, but whatever you want to call him anyhow, recently wrote a piece called Is the CIA at War with Bush? Provocative piece. The Washington Post has followed up with an interesting piece by Dana Priest and Thomas E. Ricks. They write, a growing number of career professionals within national security agencies believe that the situation in Iraq is much worse. That would be than the Bush administration is saying. And the path to success much more tenuous than is being expressed in public by top Bush administration officials. They go on to say, while President Bush, Defense Secretary Donald H. Rumsfeld, and others have delivered optimistic public appraisals, officials who fight the Iraqi insurgency and study it at the CIA and State Department and within the Army Officer Corps believe the rebellion is deeper and more widespread than is being publicly acknowledged, officials say. This is still quoting from this article by Priest and Ricks in the Washington Post. People at the CIA are mad at the policy in Iraq because it's a disaster, and they're digging the hole deeper and deeper, said one former intelligence officer who maintains contact with CIA officials. There's no obvious way to fix it. The best we can hope for is a semi-failed state hobbling along with terrorists and a succession of weak governments. I mean, this absolute disaster that George Bush has created for us with this idiotic invasion of a country that represented no threat to us, totally destabilizing it in a way that that was predicted. I mean, I remember the anti-war protests, the Do Not Invade Iraq protests. I was on the air during that time, and people were saying, if you go into Iraq, you are going to be facing guerrilla warfare that's going to go on for years and years because the countries of the Middle East are not fond of being occupied by invaders who are, by and large, Christians. It just doesn't work very well. It never has in history. And the Bush administration, history, schmistry, we don't need to read any books. George W. doesn't even read newspapers. Well, they're trying to rehabilitate him, I guess, say that he does. But he's still proud of the fact that... Well, let's go to the phones again. 1-866-889-8894. Helen in West Virginia on the line. Hey, Helen, welcome to the program.
Thank you. How are you?
I am great today, but I'll get better. How about you?
Well, you sound great.
Thank you. Thank you.
I just wanted to comment on a few things, and James Baker particularly. You mentioned him, he was Secretary of State for Bush 41.
Yes.
And
negotiate and good friends with Saddam Hussein before that, you could
yes,
say.
Yes, well, I knew there would be interference from the Republicans in one way or another over the situation for tonight. We have to be satisfied, I guess. I'm looking forward to hearing it, but I just feel that they would strong-arm something, and they're good at it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But and then, of course, the vice president making the comment in 92. I mean, you know, his comments were about getting bogged down in Iraq. You know, he didn't think it was the right thing to do.
Yeah, Dick Cheney back in 92 saying the reason why, back when he was Secretary of Defense.
I'm sorry, yes.
Saying the reason why we didn't take Baghdad in the 1991 war was because we would have gotten bogged down in a protracted guerrilla warfare. And paraphrasing now, I don't have the exact quote in front of me. He said something to the effect of, how many American lives is Saddam worth? I don't think very many, or something to that effect.
Did you by chance hear the man that was captured and the journalist? He was a journalist from Canada yesterday. Did you hear his comments?
No, I didn't. I missed that.
Well, he's a journalist, and a lady from Turkey was with him, and they were captured, and they were beaten and everything.
Uh-huh.
And the fact was that he said that the Iraqi police are working with the insurgents.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a terrible problem. This is nationalism, Helen. These people don't want us in their country. Helen, thanks for the call. We're out of time. I got to move along.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. 10 minutes before the hour.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartmann's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartmann. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Billionaires for both.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Protesters are demanding we bring our troops home from Iraq immediately, but we can't do that. You see, the Iraqis are very hospitable, and the new leader we selected for them has asked our troops to stay. If we brought them home now, we would risk insulting our hosts. And then who would be there to keep an eye on things while we extract our oil from below their soil? And there have been complaints about American mercenaries torturing Iraqi prisoners, but who are you going to trust to soften them up so they can lead us to all those missing weapons of mass destruction? The government? Or a private security firm that can do the dirty work more efficiently for less money with less accountability? Privatization. It works. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
This is the Workers' Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. A minimum wage referendum placed on the ballot in Florida could change the outcome of the November 2nd presidential election. The measure asks voters to support a $1 increase in the minimum wage from $5.15 to $6.15 an hour this year and annual increases connected to inflation.
$5.15 an hour, which is not even $11,000 a year if you're working full time, is really just a miserly sum, and it's not enough money really to live off of at all.
Elise Gowdy Wright, director of South Florida Jobs with Justice, organized a coalition of civil rights groups, religious congregations, and labor unions to collect nearly 1 million signatures over a 10-month period.
Just the sheer volume of signatures that are required to even put this to the voters as a question. It was a huge, huge hurdle. And we also have some political hurdles here. And we thought we were going to be up against another amendment and some other lawmaking that was going on in our state capitol to try and prevent citizens from putting ballot initiatives that deal with the state constitution to voters.
George W. Bush opposes raising the minimum wage from its 1997 level, while John Kerry supports an increase.
I think for a lot of folks that are behind this effort, the hope is that because this is such a popular issue and there's so many people who are supportive of it, that it will help with voter turnout.
Gowdy Wright believes increasing the minimum wage will have a positive ripple effect for many Florida workers.
Those folks who make minimum wage will be directly impacted, but those folks who might make slightly higher than minimum wage, many of those employers will feel inclined to raise their wages as well.
The restaurant industry and the Florida Chamber of Commerce are opposing the ballot initiative. With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You're all invited, election year. Neighbor against neighbor, hope against fear. Look out, America, election year. Out at the ballot box, we'll knock the socks off. Victory's near. Election year.
Election year. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Echoing Ellen or Helen's comment, the last paragraph of this article in Editor and Publisher that I was just sharing with you, Helen, you're going to love this. And an Army staff officer told the Two Post reporters, quote, "They keep telling us that Iraqi security forces are the exit strategy, but what I hear from the ground is that they aren't working. There's a feeling that Iraqi security forces are in cahoots with the insurgents and that the general and the general public to get the occupiers out." End quote. It's spreading. It's spreading. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, just a few minutes left in the program here. Lynn, for today anyway. Hey, Lynn in Los Alamos, New Mexico. What's up, Lynn?
Well, Tom, I have a question for you. I'm wondering why I am not hearing anything about impeachment. This man has so grossly, he's so grossly incompetent. Isn't there an impeachment item that says, okay, you can get this guy out of office just because
there
he can't
is.
Do his
actually,
job?
Actually, Ramsey Lewis, the former Attorney General of the United States, put together articles of impeachment, a bill of impeachment, and it was introduced into the House of Representatives, I forget by whom. But, again, because the Republicans control both the House and the Senate, it cannot come to the floor. It cannot even come out of committee. And that's why, the only time that impeachments have ever happened in the past, Andrew Johnson, back in the 1860s and Bill Clinton, is when the opposition party controlled the House.
All right. Well, then that is a warning to all of us that we have to get into the voting booths, get some more Democrats back on the House floor and the Senate floor.
Absolutely.
Because this is really important. I mean, the presidency is one thing, and it's very critical right now. But it seems to me that we also have to keep in mind that we need to get a majority of Democrats back in the House and the Senate just to keep this sane.
Just to keep democracy alive.
That if we do lose, if Bush gets in, we still have the House and the Senate, and 2 years later, everyone should be getting out and voting and making sure that
absolutely.
We get our Democrats in to fight him every step of the way.
Absolutely. Excellent point, Lynn. The big race, everybody's looking at the presidency, but it is so vital that Democrats take back either the House or the Senate or both in order for us to have democracy again, in order for us to have the competitive form of government that is necessary for democracy to flourish in the United States. Thanks for listening to our program today. Thanks to Louise for producing it, to Ira for engineering it, to Shelby for streaming us around the planet, to Ben Birch and Mike Toth for our archives. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Thanks to you for listening. We'll see you tomorrow at post-so-called debate. We'll let you know what happened, eh?
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We have